Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
It's Sunday morning. Hi. It's Wendy Snyder here with you. Good morning, Dave Schwann. Good morning.
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. And Eli Burke is in the sports lounge this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Neil Fisher producing the show. Hi, Neil.
Hey, top of the morning to you.
All right. I'm getting in this groove, I think, for Sunday mornings. My weekend is Saturdays. I work at a plant shop in LaGrange called Vagabond Botanical, and I love it. I love being around the plants. It just soothes me. My blood pressure goes down. It's just really, I love it. And then Saturday nights, sometimes I have a little cocktail or 10. Last night, I kind of just kept topping off my vodka and tonics, and I made some guacamole for Cinco de Mayo. And I also made this salad that I am completely hooked on. It's a combination. It sounds so bad when I read the recipe out, but it's a can of chickpeas or garbanzo beans or ceci, as we say if we're Italian. You rinse them off, and then you do a half a can of corn. It's a can of corn for all you White Sox fans out there. And then you chop up red peppers, red onion, Italian parsley, which is flat leaf parsley, and then you squeeze some lemon juice and 2 cloves of garlic, and you mix it all up, and I swear to God, I cannot stop eating it. And it's good for you, and I love it. And so I had a little bit of that and some vodka, and I had to taste my guacamole.
Did you made your own guacamole?
Yes, but I forgot to put the jalapeno in it.
Oh,
I found that in the drawer this morning in the refrigerator. But no problem. I'll just add it. But yeah, that's kind of, and I do put the seeds in. I know if you don't want it spicy, you put gloves on and take the seeds out. But yeah, I forgot to.
That's cool. You make your own guacamole, though.
Well, I have to tell you, I don't know what it is, but I think Chipotle has the best guac ever. I really do.
I agree. It's got a great spice level.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to look for copycat recipes, and I'm missing something. I don't know what spices they use in there, because it's so good.
Maybe we can get Eli to infiltrate undercover, take a little job there for the weekend.
I'll investigate. I'll do my research.
That would be great. But so I've settled into this weekend thing, really. I mean, I work Saturday at Vagabond. I come home and usually have a family dinner and a couple of cocktails, nothing major. And then I go to bed, and I have had this dream for the last 2 weeks, and it's crazy. It's I don't normally have the same dream. I don't know what that's called, where you just, it's like
series. It's a recurring
yeah.
Dream.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, I guess it is. It's a little different. Okay, so 2 weeks ago, I went to bed on a Saturday night, and before I come here on Sunday, I wake up and I'm like, okay, that was weird. I had a dream that I was talking about a topic that I was going to bring up, and no one was participating. Like, no one. You guys were all here. And
we didn't say anything.
No, and I'm like, and now I'm scared to bring up the topic. And no callers were calling in at 312-981-7200. It's like it bombed. And I'm like, okay, that's weird. Whatever. So I didn't do it. I think this was 3 weeks ago, actually. So then last night I had another one of these dreams, and this one was weirder. Dave Schwann, you were in it for sure.
Uh-oh.
And for some reason, the studio that I'm in right now, I was unable to broadcast from. So we were in, there were various studios, and there was one that sports guys were in. And Eli, you weren't in this. Neil, you weren't either. But it was Dave Schwann and I, and a bunch of sports guys, and they were driving me nuts because they were just interrupting and they weren't playing well with others. And Schwanny, they kept taking your microphone away. So when I wanted to talk to you, you didn't have a microphone. It was, and then I woke up this morning and I'm like, oh God, is this like anxiety about coming on the air on Sundays? I don't know what it is.
Now we have these, and I have, since we're talking about this, I have a recurring instance like this where I am at work, whether here or at previous radio stations where I've worked, and I'm on the air and I am an absolute disaster. I can't say my name. I can't read my copy. I can't do a thing. And it's the same thing each and every time. I am an absolute wreck on the air. And then you wake up and you go, oh, yeah, that one again. But, you know, it could be here. It could be other radio stations where I've worked, you know, like 40 years
ago.
And I can't do a thing on the air. All the equipment breaks. You know, I mean, everything goes wrong.
Yes. That's happened where, you know, I mean, the whole thing in broadcasting is you don't want dead air. So
no.
Anyone who's on the air has that dream every once in a while.
Yes.
And actually, the sports room, the sports studio that you and I were in, Shwani, was from the Loop radio station. So
I never worked there.
Oh, okay. Well, I did for 10 years.
Yeah, I know.
And it was there. It was a lot of wood in the studio, and there's not a lot of wood in new radio studios anymore.
Not anymore, no.
Yeah, I'm looking around. I don't think there's any wood in here at all. It's for Formica and, you know, all new.
It's wild how dreams can do that. You know, you wake up at 4 a.m. on accident, and you think, oh, I have a test I have to take. And you're like, I haven't had a test in 25 years or whatever.
It is really weird. So I know that there used to be the School of Metaphysics here in Chicago, and they would have a dream hotline.
Oh, wow.
Where
they would analyze the dream.
Yeah, and I don't know. We have to look into that for a Sunday. The School of Metaphysics, I don't know if they're still here, but actually when I worked on the Loop, we would have them on because there was like a certain day where they did the hotline where you could call and get your dreams analyzed, and it was pretty cool. Everybody's had the dream about losing your teeth. I don't know what that means, but and when you fall in your dream, I never hit the bottom.
No.
It's just
you wake up before
you wake up.
Yeah, because they say, and I don't know who they are, but if you actually hit the ground in your dream, then you've died.
I mean, I always had the irrational fear because I love horror movies. My mom and I used to watch, you know, Freddy Krueger when I was 5 because she was a makeup artist. So I knew everything was fake. But, you know, you had that weird dream of, hey, if, you know, Freddy Krueger comes, you got to stay awake. And I was so afraid of being able to stay awake and not fall asleep.
And wouldn't turn the light out in your room. And,
yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, I was the youngest. I have an older brother and an older sister. They're 2 years apart, but they're like 6 and 8 years older than me. And I'll never forget this. God, this is just a flashback. In third grade, we were studying dinosaurs. And we got to make these stuffed dinosaur pillows. And I picked out this really psychedelic neon terry cloth, and I was making a brontosaurus, and it was pretty big, and I loved it. So I had this white fiberfill stuffing on the side of my bed, and it was just sitting there. I was going to bring it to school, and all of a sudden, I was going to bed, and I, out of the corner of my eye, I saw that white bag of stuffing, but it wasn't. It was my brother's white t-shirt. He hid there, and just as I was falling asleep, he got up and just, you know, whatever, and I screamed, and I was so scared, and then my brother and sister just laughed about it, and they're like, didn't you see the bed was, like, so far away from the wall? I'm like, no, I'm a little kid. I'm not noticing that. So I didn't like falling asleep for a long while after that.
I have a similar story to that. I had night terrors.
I can't hear you, Neil, if you're talking. I don't know, for some reason your mic's
not. Oh, maybe it's not on there.
Oh.
I was going to say, I have a similar story. I had night terrors as a kid. And
those can be the worst.
They're the worst. And one summer, I was sleeping in the bedroom with my brother. We had this brand new pristine Jurassic Park poster that was over a Terminator 2 poster, both pristine. And I had a dream that my brother got sucked into the wall. So I woke up and I ripped all the posters off the wall, thinking I could grab him from the wall. And we woke up and it was just in, you know, all over the floor and pieces. So I feel bad about that, but he's okay about it.
Yeah. Well, that is, I mean, that's a great name for it, night terrors, because it's terrifying. It really is. But, you know, bombing on the air is pretty terrifying as well. Aren't you dying to know what the subject was?
I still am. I'm trying to figure it out.
This was 3 weeks ago where I had this topic I brought up and no one was participating.
Yeah, what was it?
Okay, but see, now I'm going to bring it up and you guys aren't going to participate. Just to
don't spoil the joke now.
Well, listeners, I need you for this too. 312-981-7200. See, I don't, Eli and Neil, you may be too young for this. If you stayed for lunch at school, did you guys have a lunchbox?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone at a party about a lunchbox. I don't know how it came up. And he goes, oh, my, I had a $6 million man lunchbox.
Yeah, I remember those.
And my husband's like, so did I. And I'm like, Jim, you didn't have a Star Wars lunchbox? What's wrong with you? So I just was curious about what kind of lunchboxes people had. And that was the topic I brought up. So, Shwani, I'm going to start with you. Did you have a lunchbox with a theme on it?
I did. It was a school bus lunchbox.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And it was bright yellow, and it, instead of a, like a box, it had a curved top, and there was a thermos inside of it.
I had the same shape, but mine was a U.S. mailbox, and I loved it so much.
Yeah.
And I think that you and I are older than a lot of the people, because there weren't a lot of choices when we had a lunchbox.
No, there was, well, you know, you mentioned Star Wars, but going back further than that, I saw a lot of Flintstones lunchboxes.
Yeah.
Also, Superman, and the girls had Barbie doll lunchboxes.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I wasn't really that into Barbie.
No?
No. I really should have been, but I don't know. She was fake. She was kind of fakey. And Eli, I'm sure, did you have a lunchbox?
Well, one other one real quick, the Jetsons.
Oh, yeah,
popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Because Eli, you probably had, like, by that time, I didn't stay at lunch in elementary school that much. I used to come home for lunch, but you either had a brown paper bag or some kind of like soft-sided cooler by then, didn't you?
Those are the ones I typically had as a kid. It was more just like the cooler-looking bags. We wanted to just buy like the cheaper ones because my younger brother and I had a reputation of taking a lunchbox to school and then not necessarily bringing it home at the end of the day. We'd leave it at school all the time, so it was just like, don't invest in something too much if you know you're going to lose it, I guess.
Right.
But I remember when I was like really young, I had like a Ben 10 one. That was my favorite show when I was a kid. And then there was this comic book series from like the 90s into the early 2000s called Bone. And I don't remember ever reading that comic book series, but I remember having like a metal lunchbox like that, that I don't know if I ever actually put food in it, but I remember having it all the time.
Bone?
Bone, yeah. I just looked it up now to remember the name of it. It was like these three little like Casper the Friendly Ghost looking guys. They were like skeletons in a way. And I guess it was like, I'm learning more about this as I'm reading this in the moment. It was a fantasy adventure comedy comic book series. There were 55 issues released, and apparently I had a lunchbox about
it. You were
a
fan and didn't even know what it was.
And was it before it was cool? I'm going to have to look more into this now. But
all right, and Neil, I'm sure you had one.
So I was mostly a paper bag guy, but my favorite lunchbox ever, which is kind of a film reference because I'm a pop culture nerd, is Waiting for Guffman. If anyone ever seen that movie, it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's a great movie. There was a lunchbox?
There was a lunchbox. So Corky St. Clair, his most prized possession was a Remains of the Day lunchbox with Anthony Hopkins on it. So my high school band director, who I'm still friends with, Kevin McColgan, one of the greatest teachers ever, as one of his gifts senior year of high school, we gave him a Remains the Day lunchbox.
That's fabulous. All right, we've gotten some texts, and my favorite lunchbox was the Brady Bunch. See, I watched the Brady Bunch religiously. I just, maybe I just didn't go to stay for lunch frequently enough to get my own, because had a stupid U.S. mailbox. It was just dumb.
You were just a red, white, and blue thing with U.S. mail on it?
Yeah.
Do you think a Brady Bunch lunchbox is like split into like nine squares in the middle and you put a different food in each one, like a bento box?
Well, of course, Eli, the lunchbox should have pork chops and applesauce.
Pork chops and applesauce.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a great idea, though, with the sectioned off thing, because I don't like my food touching anyway, so that would be perfect. 219 says, I had a Bonanza lunchbox.
The Cartwrights.
Yes. Lauren Green, Michael Landon, right?
Wasn't Michael
he
Landon was in it. Also, Dan Blocker.
Yeah, was he was.
The great big guy.
Hoss.
Oh, he was Hoss.
Yep. Yeah. Lauren Green, yep.
Yeah.
All right, Paul.
I don't remember much about it, I'll be honest.
I watched, Bonanza. I was a big Bonanza fan.
708, I'm 69. I had a Flintstones lunchbox.
Yep, there you go, Flintstones.
630, Holly Hobby and Partridge Family. I guess the lunchbox, I guess it works. I guess this dream was a...
Topics like that, when we talk about hot dogs and pizza and ice cream and lunchboxes, you bet. You're going to get a response here from everybody.
847, I had a lunchbox with the monkeys on it.
Yes, I loved the monkeys.
Really Hip Kids had the Partridge Family lunchbox. We should try and call Danny Bonaducci and see what kind of lunchbox he had. I'm dying to know. All right. Well, we may continue this later on this afternoon because I'm here from morning till 1. Let's just put it that way. And let's just take – Lizzie has called us. Lizzie, did you have a bad dream? Was it last night?
No, it wasn't last night, but it's continuous. I have a horrible thing about snakes. I just, I think about them all the time. And they are in my dreams constantly, but they never, ever hurt me. They're like a force in my life. They show me where something is. If I'm missing something, they lead me to where it might be. They're just constantly in my dreams, but never hurting me. And so in 2006, I had worked for a company, and in 2006, I had already been there for 10 years. And at that time, I had gone out to a spa in California called the Golden Door, and they had a dream master out there. And I shared my fear of snakes. And she said, even if you're on a trail or something and you see a little brown snake, don't be scared. It's like, a force in your life. It leads you to whatever it is that you're looking for or where you want to be. So I had come home from the spa, and it was about a week later, and I remember it like yesterday. It was a Friday night, and I had a dream. So this was for real. I got bit in my dream. I got bit in my neck, and I woke up screaming, and my whole body just unraveled. I was like just out of my mind. And I called my dream master. And he said, I don't know what's going on in your life. And I said, nothing. It's like really, really quiet. And she said, well, let me know what's happening. And Monday morning, I got fired from my job.
Oh, no. You got bit in the neck by your job.
I got bit in the neck. And that was my force. And it's just, I dream of them all the time. Like, they never hurt me. They never bother me. They just show up in my dreams.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Snakes are good, or can be good. I'm sorry, we have to break for news, Lizzie, but thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We are going to take a quick break, and then we are going to do This Week in Health, and we're going to talk about lunchboxes and dreams. We've got a lot of stuff planned for today. 720 WGN. It's time now for Schwani's far-flung forecast.
Thank you, Wendy. Good morning, everybody. Get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We're heading way out west today, out to Colville, California, which is on the California-Nevada border. And if you drew a straight line north, you would run into Reno, Nevada, and Carson City, Nevada, from where Colville is. The town goes back to 1868 and was named for a U.S. senator from the area, Cornelius Cole. But we mentioned Colville, California today. We saw an interesting story which fits right into what everybody's talking about these days, and that's high gas prices. We're seeing them everywhere. How about this, Wendy? We've seen $5 here and more and so forth. This county where Colville is has $7 on average or higher. And at a store in Colville, we get a report from Jason Nathanson about the high gas prices there.
Walker Country Store.
Jody Lees works at the Walker Country Store in Mono County, home to the highest gas prices in the country.
I hate it. Gas is way too high. Just ridiculous.
Gas at her store on the eastern edge of California between Mammoth and Lake Tahoe hasn't hit $7 just yet, but some stations nearby,
they're like almost $8 a gallon, I think.
She and others will drive to Nevada to fill up.
It's about 35 miles.
The savings are worth it, but even with the high prices, she says she'll never leave her little slice of heaven.
You can go anywhere here, hiking, fishing.
I'm Jason Nathanson.
How about that? $7 to $8 on average for a gallon of regular gas. We're not talking premium here. Regular.
When is this going to... Well, I thought gas prices were going to come down. That was promised to us.
Well, that one of the reasons they're so high... Well, California has the highest gas prices in the country. But Colville, if you look at it on the map, they're in a mountainous region that it's in a very, very remote area. So, you know, it's costing a lot of money just to transport the gas, which is expensive enough to get it there, you know. So between $7 and $8 there around Colville and Mono County. Colville, California has partly sunny skies, 48. They'll have a high of 61 today.
Good God, y'all. That's a lot of money for a gallon of gas.
It's a good thing I walk everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the smart one.
I, you know, put my Mariano's card in and try and say, I got to save 40 cents a gallon the last time I filled up. That's a lot, really, when you're thinking about it, but it was still $76 to fill up my tank. That is crazy town.
$76. Wow.
Unreal. All right. Well, thank you for that. I guess you're proving that things could always be worse, right?
Well, I get in a way of speaking, yes. Yeah.
All right. We are going to talk about This Week in Health. That is coming up next here on 720 WGN. All right, This Week in Health, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. I'm Wendy Snyder with you on a Sunday morning. And let's say hello to Dr. Sri Kamanduri. Am I close to pronouncing that correctly, doctor?
That's perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Sri Kamanduri, Director of System Integration for the Digestive Health Institute at Northwestern Medicine. We're going to talk about this new Center for Advanced Endoscopy at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. First of all, I want to start by saying I have had a colonoscopy. I think I'm actually due this year, so I will make an appointment. And I have had some digestive issues, so I just my doctor did an endoscopy and a colonoscopy. I just got all my endoscopies at the same time, which is a good way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's important to get these done. Let's talk about GERD. Let's talk about acid reflux. Let's talk about some digestive issues and what they can mean and what an endoscopy can find. Why don't you tell us how important an endoscopy is?
Yeah, so I think that's a great example. You know, when we look at a lot of these symptoms, our biggest goal is to be preventative, right? Early detection of anything that might lead to cancer. And, you know, reflux or, you know, GERD or heartburn, all these things are pretty important for the esophagus, and esophageal cancer is one of our fastest rising cancers in GI. And it's, you know, unfortunately, we typically, when we have reflux, we think of heartburn, but a lot of people just don't even have traditional symptoms. So people can have lots of reflux even when they're not feeling it, or have sort of atypical symptoms like a chronic cough or, you know, hoarseness. But on the other side, to your point, if you do have symptoms, you know, a lot of times we take things like this as not just part of life, you know, that you're having some heartburn and that's just normal. But if it's chronic, it really could be a sign there's some inflammation going on that could lead to esophageal cancer. So that's where an endoscopy helps us identify things early. And that's where a center like ours, which focuses on treatment and minimally invasive ways to cure these diseases before they become cancer.
And there are things sometimes that they find that it's like a baseline, I guess. I have a bit of an esophageal hernia. Is that what that is? What is that called?
Yeah, so it's called a hiatal hernia.
Yeah.
These are, you know.
And so that's something that was found when I had an endoscopy. What is that exactly, and is it treatable, or do you just monitor it and see if it gets worse or not?
Yeah, so that is one of the main reasons. So the hiatal hernia is part of the stomach, and people get a lot of reflux, have this hernia, which means part of the stomach just kind of goes above the diaphragm, and it happens to a lot of people, and it creates like a reservoir where acid can accumulate. We treat reflux mostly with medication and diet and things, but there are many times where that just doesn't cut it. And in the past, you had to have a pretty big surgery that, you know, it doesn't really always work and can cause lots of side effects. And now we have lots of minimally invasive endoscopic ways with a camera, like endoscopy, to actually correct these anatomical defects, so people don't need to be on a lifelong of medication.
And you can have mine doesn't really bother me. I didn't even know I had one. They just found it when I had an endoscopy. So that's not necessarily a thing that's going to bother you, right? I mean, it just depends.
No.
Okay.
Correct. And that's why we want to be thoughtful about not doing things if it's, you know, again, if we don't need to fix it, we don't fix it.
Right. Now, is like colonoscopies, I know that colorectal cancer is on the rise among young adults. And didn't they drop the age for colonoscopy?
Yeah. And, we've seen a much higher incidence between 40 and 50. So they dropped the screening to 45.
Okay.
And that's, in fact, that age group is something we're seeing with all GI cancers.
Why is that? Is there any hypotheses? I bet it's because we eat crappier food, and I mean, I can't think of anything else. Environmental? Do they have any idea?
Yeah, it's definitely the environment in many ways. I think the processed foods plays a role. Mm-hmm. I think genetics plays a big role too. But at the same point, things are catching up to us. And you know, but the good news is we do have lots of ways to identify risk factors and really help people early.
All right. So, yeah, we all know, you know, you're supposed to get a colonoscopy now at the age of 45 instead of 50. Is there a recommended age for your first endoscopy, or do you not need one unless you're experiencing issues?
Yeah, it's a great question, because that's what we're battling with. It really hasn't been cost effective to do screening, because even though the esophageal cancer is rising, not prevalent enough to make it, you know, friendly to insurance companies. So,
can I just ask you, what is friendly to insurance companies? Anything?
Exactly.
Good God.
So with that said, there are, you know, what we're really pioneering are some non-invasive, non-endoscopic things you can do in the office that are screening tools that are, you know, approved for esophageal cancer early detection.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then can we talk about some of those non-invasive screenings and the new Center for Advanced Endoscopy at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage? Can we do that next?
That'd be great.
Sounds perfect. And if you have any questions about acid reflux, GERD, any intestinal issues that you may have, we're here for you, 312-981-7200. Wendy Snyder with you on a Sunday morning, and this week in health, we have Dr. Sri Komanduri on the line with us, and he is the Director of System Integration for the Digestive Health Institute at Northwestern Medicine. So this new Center for Advanced Endoscopy, it's at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, one of only a few standalone advanced endoscopy centers in the U.S. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, what exactly can patients find when they go to this center?
Yeah, so this type of a center, you know, goes a little bit beyond what we were talking about with, you know, routine screening or colonoscopy and upper endoscopy, which is done everywhere. But what happens when you find something? So diseases like early cancer or some of the endoscopic treatments for reflux, and then all the way to our most exciting new advancement, which has been endoscopy or endoscopy approaches to obesity, so bariatric type procedures that don't require surgery. So these are more what we call therapeutic or more advanced in the sense of the skill set for the endoscopy. So these are traditionally procedures you would go to an academic or university medical center in the city. And what we wanted to do, and this aligns with our NM vision for the entire healthcare network, is really bring these types of procedures into the community so people don't need to travel.
Wow. Well, that sounds great. When you do get a colonoscopy, sometimes there are polyps that are found and they're removed right then and there. Is that kind of the same thing with when you have endoscopy, when you have that procedure? Are there things that might be, are there polyps there too? Or
yeah, so all of these, you know, whether in the upper or lower GI system, you find early cancers or precancerous lesions that are large. And these are not always things that our average gastroenterologists want to deal with. And so where years ago you would just have surgery, and these are big surgeries, no longer is that needed. So we at the center will do a lot more of these complex techniques to remove early cancerous lesions of both sides, the upper GI tract and the lower, and the esophagus and colon, without any kind of surgical need.
Wow, that's great news. All right, we have some listeners who have some questions. Lynn is on the line. Hi, Lynn, did you have a question for Dr. Kamanduri?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had an endoscopy, and they found Barrett's. And I'm, like, super healthy, active person. And so my doctor put me on a PPI almost, like, forever. And I'm just not really comfortable about that, and I wonder if you could talk about PPIs and, you know, using them long term.
And I'm just jumping in. Barrett's esophagus is a condition, and I don't know what PPI is. So, doctor, this is where you jump in.
Yeah, so it's a common thing, and the good news is the risk of cancer from just, you know, Barrett's esophagus is extremely low, and it's actually much more common in men. So when we find it in women, it's even a lower risk. The reason they put you on the acid medication is that's the one thing we know that can, if we don't control acid reflux, and the PPI is a proton pump inhibitor, it's your traditional drugs like Nexium and Prilosec you see in the store. It's the one thing we know that can help reduce progression of that disease. But that being said, what we do always want to do is minimize that to the as much as possible and see if we can get you off the medication.
Okay. And in going off of it, I've been on it like 2 months, and I mean, it works great. You can eat whatever you want, and I guess that's why people stay on it.
And 2 months is not really that long when you think about it.
I know, but I'm looking forward to, you know, how long, you know?
Doctor?
And, Yeah, it's just a discussion, I think, with them a little bit. And and we were just talking about some of the procedures that can be done endoscopically now. And a lot of those we do to get people off medication. And honestly, Barrett's is a great place to think about that, because you really, that means you have a significant amount of this reflux to cause that injury. So sometimes a longer term anatomic solution that's minimally invasive is a better option than medication.
Maybe, Lynn, you should stop in the new Center for Advanced Endoscopy. Are you near Central DuPage Hospital at all?
I'm not, but I did go through Northwestern. Or do I just have to stop drinking coffee and red wine? You know, that's the problem.
That might be it. Lynn, good luck to you. What do you think? Should she stay away from the coffee and the red wine, doctor?
Yeah, it's a, you know, dietary. These are all triggers for reflux. You know, my philosophy is really about moderation. I think you still have to live your life, but I think a lot of us, you know, drink a lot more coffee and wine than we think we do. So it's just kind of bringing it down.
Yeah. All right. I think we have time for one more question. Bonnie from DeKalb. Hi, Bonnie. You have a question about GERD?
Yes. Well, I think it's GERD. We don't really know. The doc, I did a manometry at
Central DuPage. I think the doctor might know about those things. And they suggested now an endoscopy with Botox. And so I'm a little concerned. I've tried every single PPI. I started with omeprazole, with esomeprazole, whatever, and then rabeprazole, and none of them are working. And so, so now the Botox thing, I'm a little, if you could explain it a little bit more, I'm still, you know, does it, how long does it last? I know Botox, if you get injections, it doesn't last, right? You have to get it again. So what's the long-term outlook for getting treated with an endoscopy and Botox?
Yeah, so to kind of boil that down, that sounds like you have a contraction problem in the esophagus, and it's actually not reflux. And so the Botox just relaxes the muscle.
So that's why the PPIs aren't working.
Yeah.
Correct. And we generally don't actually use the Botox much anymore because we actually have better procedures endoscopically to correct those problems. But that's something that obviously someone would have to dive into more detail. But that's kind of why the medication probably doesn't work.
There you go.
So the Botox is something that would work, though, even if it's temporary?
It's very temporizing. Yeah, very short-lived, like you said. And then but we kind of walked away from that because of exactly what you said, is that it requires too many reinterventions.
So what's the next step, then, instead of the Botox?
Hard to say completely without knowing what they were looking at, but, you know, usually it's a procedure called a POEM procedure, P-O-E-M. It's a endoscopic cutting of the muscle that actually solves the problem of the contraction issue. But that might be one thing to think about.
Yes, you should definitely look into this and head over to the Center for Advanced Endoscopy. That might help you out, Bonnie. Although you're in DeKalb.
Thank you. Yeah. But it's okay. We travel all the time.
Well, excellent. Yes, it is the Center for Advanced Endoscopy at Northwestern Medicine, Central DuPage Hospital. That Botox, it's funny. They are using it for a lot of things, like if you clench your jaw when you sleep, it basically paralyzes the muscle. So, yeah, with some contractions like that, that's why it was being used. And no wrinkles in your esophagus. So that works out perfectly. I read something, doctor, about a connection between GERD and asthma. Is this a recent development?
No, you know, it's a not common, but it can happen. You know, people with reflux, like, you know, can have regurgitation or acid coming up into their throat. And then it kind of goes down into the airway. And so that can happen when people sleep or exercise. And then because of that, it causes the same kind of irritation that makes it hard to breathe and causes reactive or inflammation in the airways. So there is an association at times between asthma and reflux.
Someone has texted, is stretching of the esophagus a common procedure if you're having an endoscopy?
It's not common, but it is, common if you have a problem. And sometimes people can get reflux causing narrowings because of scarring. And then it's a pretty safe and easy solution. So we do it frequently, but I wouldn't say it's common in all folks.
All right. And let's talk to Kathy real quickly here. Kathy, we have just about a minute or two. You have a question for Dr. Komanduri?
Yes, I do. If I have bursitis in the hip area, can it cause pain in the intestines, lower abdomen area?
That's a great question. A lot of abdominal pain does radiate from the hip joint.
Really?
In the sense, because the same, you know, it's kind of like when people get back, you know, nerve problems, it radiates across to the front.
Oh, yeah.
And the hip has the same sort of thing, but so abdominal pain sometimes is actually related to a musculoskeletal injury. I'm not quite sure about bursitis, but it wouldn't shock me if there was some relationship.
All right. Thank you.
Wow. I had no idea about that. And I have, for some reason, I had a test on my gallbladder, and it was functioning at 2%. Now, we don't need our gallbladders, and my doctor was like, well, why don't we make an appointment to get that removed? And I said, okay. And then my husband goes, is it bothering you? And I said, no. And he goes, then why are you getting the surgery? So I, of course, said, I don't know. And I waited. Well, then I had a full-blown gallbladder attack and had to have emergency surgery on that, which is very common. What do I need to know about not having a gallbladder? And why do we have one if we don't need one?
Yeah, it's just an organ that helps store some of the bile, which helps kind of work on diet cholesterol and some food digestion. But you can store a lot of it in your liver, and that's why you don't necessarily need it. But once it's removed, most people don't really need to make any adjustments. It really doesn't bother people. In some people, if that bile can't be fully stored in the liver, some of the salts that are associated with it can cause people to have bowel changes like diarrhea. And so if that starts to be an impact, that's something to think about, and there are medications for that.
Interesting. Well, thank God. I'm knocking on wood if I could find some in the studio, but I haven't had any issues. And why do we have an appendix? Why do we have that too? We don't need that, do we?
No, and there's a lot of things like that that serve subtle functions, the appendix, and they're more for the immune system. But I think ultimately there are other organs that kind of, you know, suffice without it. And so, yeah, probably just something in natural selection that we were born with.
Interesting. All right. Well, I think listeners should, is there a website that we can send people to find out more information about this new Center for Advanced Endoscopy at Northwestern DuPage Hospital, Northwestern Medicine?
Yeah, if you just search the Center for Advanced Endoscopy, it's at Northwestern, it pops up. Or if you just go to nm.org and type it in, it'll get you right there.
Thank you for all this information, Dr. Komanduri, Dr. Sri Komanduri, Director of System Integration for the Digestive Health Institute at Northwestern Medicine. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
It's Sunday morning with me, Wendy Snyder, and I just want to give you an example of the power of WGN Radio. There was a story, I subscribed to Patch.com, and Lauren Trout broke this story. I read it, and it said, a Tinley Park woman and mother of two says she's lucky to be alive after a medical emergency on Christmas Eve 2025 and owes it all to the person who made that one call to 911. Joining us now is Stacy Duransky. Stacy, how are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just want to tell you, I subscribed to Patch.com. I got this story, and I reached out to my producer, Neil, and I said, we have to book Stacy. And then I heard you on the Lisa Dent Show. And tell your story to people who may not have heard you on Lisa's show. And we also have an update, which I'm excited to share. So first and foremost, Christmas Eve, you were at a gas station in Tinley Park, 194th and Harlem Avenue, and what happened?
I went to go vacuum out my car in preparation of putting in my daughter's car seat and cleaning out my trunk for Christmas gifts, and I started vacuuming out the front seat, moved to the back seat, and next thing I know, I was in an ambulance.
All right. Now, how scary is that? You're in an ambulance. You have no idea what's going on. You're pregnant, and that's all you kept telling the paramedics, right?
Yeah. Yes, they asked if I had seizures, and I just remember yelling, I'm pregnant, I'm pregnant. So I was afraid that they were going to give me something that
right.
would hurt my baby.
Exactly. I would be afraid of that, too. Now, they took you to a hospital. They performed a CT scan, and that was something you were not sure you wanted to do, right, since you were pregnant?
Correct. I was worried about the radiation, but the pressure in my head was getting so much worse. I finally agreed to the CT when they said that they would double shield my abdomen.
And what did they find after the CT scan?
After the CT scan, they said they had bad news that I had a brain bleed and an aneurysm that had ruptured.
Okay, that scares me so much, Stacy. You had no prior problems or symptoms or anything.
No, if I had had any symptoms or a headache, if I felt weird, I would have stopped and gone home or called somebody.
Okay, that is scary. So, first of all, how's your health now?
Much better, much better.
And they treated it. What do you need to do now to make sure that doesn't happen again?
Just regular CTs every year, following up with my neurosurgeon and my neurologist every year for my understanding the rest of my life.
And how's the baby now?
She's beautiful. She's absolutely perfect. She's 4 months old.
Oh, my God. What's her name?
Piper.
Oh, I love it. Piper. And you have another child as well, correct?
Yes, I have a four-year-old son, Raymond.
Okay. So Raymond and Piper are happy to have mommy. And there was a person who helped mommy live. And basically, someone saw you and called 911 at that gas station in Tinley Park. And you did not know who that person was. You had no idea.
No,
so you came on Lisa's show. I heard you, and you put the word out there that you said, "Hey, what?" You just basically wanted this person to come forward, correct?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you.
And what happened after you were on Lisa's show, and after this was in the patch?
I think it was WGN 7 or NBC 7. I can't remember. There's so many radios and TV. There's so many.
I know. You were all over the news.
They said that they had a surprise for me and had him on FaceTime. His name is Skyler, and I don't think people can truly comprehend the gratitude I have for him.
All right, so 30-year-old Skyler Smith was a manager at that gas station, right?
Yes, mm-hmm.
And he just did what hopefully any human being would do when they see someone in trouble. He immediately called 911, and you were unconscious. He jumped into action. He went inside to find a customer to help you, and then an ambulance arrived. How was your reunion? What do you even say to someone who has saved your life?
I just started crying and saying thank you.
Oh, that is so awesome. All right, so this happened on Christmas Eve of last year. Are you going to have Skyler Smith over for Christmas Eve this year? Because I think you owe him a Christmas present.
I have no idea. I am meeting him in person tomorrow, so I'm just very excited.
Oh, honestly, I am covered in goosebumps right now. First of all, I'm so glad your health is back in good shape right now. And I'm so happy about Piper, and Raymond's happy that you're around. And I mean, what did Skyler say? I can only imagine.
He just kept saying he was doing his job.
That's amazing.
You did more than just your job. Because in today's world, not a lot of people would have stopped and done something.
Yeah. Well, I hope people can learn a lesson. If you see someone in trouble, you know, I don't know how to do CPR. I wouldn't know what to do. But all you have to do is, everybody has a phone, call 911 and get help. Stacy Duransky, I am so happy to hear you and your kids in the background, huh?
Yes.
Just congratulations. I don't know what else to say other than I'm so happy Skyler Smith has been located. 30 years old, does a great job, saved your life, and now you're going to go on to have many, many Merry Christmases in the future. Congratulations
Absolutely.
To you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you reaching out.
Absolutely. Thank you for talking to us. That is such a feel-good story. I love it. We all have to help one another. We certainly do. And good Charlie Puth, one call. That was perfect for this segment. And I bet Lisa Dent is going to have her on to give an update as well. It's the power of radio, people. It's 720 WGN. Who had a chipmunk's lunchbox? It's Wendy Snyder here with you. It's Sunday morning. We were talking earlier about a dream I had where I was discussing lunchboxes and no one was participating. No one was calling in, but that was just a dream. The reality is we talked about it a little earlier this morning and everyone was talking about it. And we have a lot of texts, some of their lunchboxes that they have, these poor 630 and 414. I didn't have a lunchbox, only brown paper bags. 414, I always used a brown paper bag. 217, I had a hard plastic Dunkin' Donuts lunchbox with a picture of the girl mascot. Who is the girl mascot of Dunkin' Donuts?
I just remember the little man with the mustache that would get up in the middle of the night and say, "Time to make the donuts."
Time to make the donuts.
That's all I remember.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people still have their lunchboxes. Mine's long gone.
Yeah, I don't have my U.S. mail one because it was stupid.
I guess the character was Fred the Baker. Was the name of that character from Dunkin'
Donuts. Fred the Baker.
Time to make the donuts. Now yeah. It's Cuppy, a friendly human-sized coffee cup character, which is part of your nightmares now, I think. So.
You know what else is? And I'm sorry, I love the Jewel, and I don't say jewels. I don't. But what is that red mascot thing they have? I don't even know what it is.
It's called Jojo, the official red furry one-eyed monster mascot for Jewel Osco, introduced in 2017.
Okay, Shwani, look that up. Look up Jojo, Jewel mascot.
Jojo, the Jewel mascot.
Yeah, it's just a one-eyed.
Yeah, you're not going to think it's real.
I don't understand
it. It's like a furry jelly bean, like Mike Wazowski looking thing, but if it was red.
Yeah.
Can I say something as a former mascot? I don't understand why all the mascots have to be just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, all right,
yeah.
Stop, hold everything. As a former mascot...
Yeah, we got to back up there.
What were you?
So I was Herky the Hawkeye at University of Iowa.
No way.
Yeah.
That's a big assignment.
It was a big assignment. That's why So earlier, before we started recording, I gave Eli some Tiger Balm, because I always carry it with me. Because I had a neck injury as Herky the Hawkeye. I was doing a charity event, and I was wearing the football helmet, which was 30 pounds, and my handler did not tell me about a little dip in the driveway, so I slipped, got whiplash with this huge helmet, and I was right away into the physical therapy room with all the football players, and they said, what are you in for? And I was like, I'm the mascot, and they all just laughed at me.
Neil Fisher, are you putting this in a book? Because this is funny.
It's going to be there one day. I have a lot of stories, like no one washed the outfit, so it just smelled like sweat.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Did you have to share the outfit? What did it smell like?
I don't want to give the exact number, but let's just say there was more than enough people on one hand that would wear that at any given time.
All right.
And little kids just loved to punch me, and I couldn't talk, so I wasn't allowed to talk.
What is it with kids punching mascots? Why?
I don't know. It was like Dennis the Menace. Every time I saw a little kid, I'd go for the high five, and they would punch me right in the lower quarters every time.
Well, do you see those videos in like, it's like the halftime of like a Minnesota Vikings game. They do a game of like all the little kids versus a team of mascots, and the mascots are not taking it easy in the slightest. It could be like payback for that.
Speaking of dreams, that was my dream to be in one of those football games so I could stiff arm little kids on my way to a touchdown.
Those look so fun. I wish we had more of those.
All right. Shwani, I have to point something out here. We're the older people of these four of us.
Older.
Yeah, I said older.
Leave it at that. Yes.
But I'm listening to Eli and Neil talking in the hallway this morning. And I didn't hear what was ailing Eli, but I heard Neil go, "You want some Tiger Balm? I always carry it with me." You guys sounded like two little old men.
I woke up a couple days ago with just like a really sore neck, and it has not gotten better, but the Tiger Balm feels great.
Okay, Tiger Balm works?
Oh, it does. Yeah, I use it a lot. And
better than Ben Gay?
It's similar. I like Tiger Balm better. Yeah, I like that there's a large cat behind the logo. It just makes me feel stronger. So, yeah.
You are killing me. All right, I'm going to try Tiger Balm because I have neck issues as well, but I'm older than you. I should have it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things that I've been using a long time, and I was helping my wife, Colleen, when she was directing her musical, and I had a ton on, and I was worried that the younger kids, their 18-year-olds, were going to make fun of me, and one of them was a dancer, and she said, "Wait a minute, is that Tiger Balm I smell?" I was like, "Oh, no, please don't make fun of me." She goes, "I love this stuff. I'm a dancer. I use it all the time." I was like, "Oh, thank God." So, thank you.
Well, sales of Tiger Balm is going to go up now. All right. We have just had so much fun today. We've been talking about dreams and we've been talking about lunchboxes. 815 says, "I'm 61. I had a Beverly Hillbillies lunchbox." I remember those.
Yes.
I don't.
I think they were in the old car, you know, with Jethro driving.
Jeb
was on the right-hand side, and Ellie Mae and Granny way up in the back seat.
Yeah, the truck.
There. Yeah,
right?
The truck.
With her chair on top.
With the old primitive sticks that made up the letters, Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember those.
630, I had a Quick Draw McGraw lunchbox. Quick Draw McGraw.
Yep.
All right.
There was probably a Huckleberry Hound and Yogi Bear lunchbox also.
60 years old, Partridge Family. I don't know. Oh, Buck Rogers.
That goes back.
I don't remember that. What the name of that little thing was. Beady, beady, beady. Was it a bird? I don't even remember now. I just remember the sound it made.
Was that Tweaky or something?
Yeah.
Like Mel Blanc? Right?
Yeah. Buck Rogers. Charlie's Angels. That would have been awesome.
That would be the 70s. Mid-70s, yeah.
My mom was, 815 says, my mom was a Tupperware dealer, so I guess she had me advertising for her by sending me to school with this boring beauty. And they sent a picture. It is not a boring beauty. They have this stuff now, and it's a red Tupperware with the clear top, and then the handle folds over the top so you can carry it like a little plastic picnic basket kind of thing. And then inside I was jealous of the kids who had this. It's the square sandwich shaped Tupperware container, and then a couple of round things that you could put, you know, grapes or something in. I was jealous of the kids who had the Tupperware containers. I think it's really good. I'm trying to see what other.
So did you bring your lunch when you went, or did they have meals provided?
Well, I only had my U.S. Mail lunchbox, and I'll tell you, in like K through 5, I probably only stayed for lunch maybe 7 times the whole time I was there.
So it wasn't through rain, sleet, or snow, is what you're saying.
Yeah, right.
Uphill both ways.
Yeah, and I just, it really was not fun having lunch. Nothing stayed cold, and I just kind of got really sick of warm bologna sandwiches.
Yeah, yeah. We never really had a great lunch program, so I would always bring a ham and cheese sandwich with I think Lay's. But the only thing I ever got at lunch was the Bosco sticks, which were great.
Oh yeah,
you know, that was about it.
Yeah. In high school, we both went to Riverside Brookfield, mm-hmm. and I would get the Bulldog Burger all the time and put the slaw on top of it just because it would help with, you know, bury the taste of the burger. And it was actually pretty good. But, I only had a lunchbox in K through 5. And, most frequently my grandpa would pick me up because my mom was working. And sometimes he was born in Italy near Venice, and sometimes for lunch he would have a little glass of wine, and we would have pears and Parmigiano or Fontanella cheese and Italian bread.
Oh, wow.
That sounds great.
That was so good. And sometimes, you know, I'd water down some wine just so I could taste it. And then I'd go back to, you know, elementary school. With the hiccups. No, I was not. A Munster's lunchbox. How fun is that?
Munster's would be, sure.
Yeah. 815, good morning, Wendy and crew. I had a Flintstones metal lunchbox with a cool thermos.
Yep.
And also, I sold Tupperware and have the square containers and the round one with the little container on top. That was, honestly, I thought that was the coolest thing. But then what if you made your sandwich on beefsteak rye and it was an oval? It wouldn't fit in that little square container.
It wouldn't. You'd have to really push it in.
No. My parents were cheap, says 224. We had brown paper bags. What a bummer. Eric in Lake Villa. I hope your parents aren't around and listening because they were cheap. I don't. Someone else. Oh, the Dunkin' Donuts. All right, there is a lunchbox that we didn't know the woman who was from Dunkin' Donuts. It's a crazy woman with eyelashes and a hat and flowers, and it says Dunkin' Munchkins. I do kind of remember that.
Yeah, I can't place that.
Well, you can. I'll send you a picture of it. But yeah, the Dunkin' Donuts Dunkin' Munchkins lunchbox with thermos from the 1970s. You'll see the lady with the flowers if you look it up. It's Wendy Snyder here, Sunday morning, and let's say hello to our television man, Alex Zalbin. He is host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Wendy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, but it has finally happened. I have a list of things to watch, and I am backlogged. I can't catch up, and I get so irritated when people say, oh, there's nothing to watch. There's a lot to watch.
too much. I mean, just like you, I have a backlog. My job is watching TV, and yet constantly I'm talking to fellow television critics, and they're like, oh, have you watched this? And I said, no, I've missed it. I've gone past it. There are too many things to watch in the future. There's always something to watch on TV all the time.
All the time. And I still have not watched Beef, which I need to watch. And I still have to watch Rooster. I love Stephen Carell and Steve Carell, not Stephen. And I haven't seen that yet. And I haven't seen Something Very Bad Is Going to Happen. What is that one again? Because that I think I'm going to love.
Something Very Bad Is Going to Happen comes from producers The Duffer Brothers, Stranger Things, but this is very much for adults. Don't sit around with kids and watch this one. It's about a couple that's about to get married. They are traveling out to meet his parents for the first time. The parents are weird. The siblings are weird. Everything is weird. The title of the show, as I said, it's on Netflix, is Something Very Bad Is Going to Happen. And pretty much every episode, something very bad does indeed happen, as it gets more and more horrifying and strange. It's very off-putting, but it's beautifully shot. And this is an odd thing to say, but I watched it on my laptop with my headphones and found the sound, the use of sound, very interesting as it moves from left to right. So if you don't have a great sound system on your TV, maybe don't watch it on your TV. Watch on your phone with your headphones or on your laptop, because you'll get a very different experience.
Can I just tell you, we have a decent setup on our TV, and the sound on Netflix is terrible. What is the deal with that?
So this is me speculating. I don't know this for sure, but they do have an upscale HD plan that you can get, and I'm guessing the better sound is on that. I assume you have probably the basic Netflix or ad-free Netflix, and that probably doesn't provide the same sound experience. It also, and again, I'm sort of talking out of school here, so I'm not 100% sure, but there's certainly probably buffering and streaming concerns as well. So versus watching, say, on a Blu-ray that's going directly to your TV, you're going through several different signals that are probably degrading it.
All right, because it's, and I don't know if it's just because I'm old, but I have to watch everything with subtitles now, because you don't, you're not hearing the dialogue very much. And then if you're watching The Boys and Butcher is talking, sometimes I have trouble understanding him, except for a few choice words that he uses all the time.
I think you're right. I've certainly experienced that as well. We don't have the best TV at home, but everybody in my family also watches with the subtitles on, because I think the experience has just gotten degraded a lot on streaming. And again, it just may be multiple people using it on the same network in your house. I get times, particularly something like a Paramount Plus, it'll just sort of downscale all the video I'm watching as well, because too many people are using the network at the same time. But it kind of stinks. We pay a lot of money for these things. You would expect a better viewing experience.
Yeah, I don't even know how much we pay a month, because we get everything. We really do.
I try not to check because it would, I'd do the cartoon eye popping thing if I found out how much money we spend.
Yeah, I agree. All right, a lot of Lord of the Flies fans out there. Tell us about this, what's going on.
Yeah, I was really surprised to find out this is the first ever TV adaptation of Lord of the Flies. Lord of the Flies. It's already premiered. That's a different show. That has already premiered internationally to great acclaim. It comes from some of the production team behind Adolescence, which is a huge hit on Netflix last year, and it has some of those themes to it. Based on the novel, of course, it's a very faithful adaptation that's going to be premiering tomorrow on Netflix in 4 episodes. And if you want to watch young boys kill each other and turn into savages all over again, it's probably a hard watch. But again, it's been well regarded overseas, a big hit that's going to be on Netflix tomorrow. And yeah, it's a pretty, no twists, just pretty straightforward adaptation of Lord of the Flies, the classic novel.
All right. Lord of the Flies. I didn't tell you. We talked to Danny Boy O'Connor last week, who was in the hip-hop group House of Pain with that song Jump Around, and he bought the Outsiders' house and has turned it into a museum. So we were, it's in Oklahoma, is it? Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it's, you know, he did a lot of renovation. He did a GoFundMe thing. Jack White donated $30,000. Billy Idol contributed to the GoFundMe campaign. And so we were talking to him about books we read in high school. And wasn't Lord of the Flies on that list, too? Or am I imagining it?
I have to imagine it was. I certainly read it in high school, and I think everybody else did as well. It's the sort of thing that even if you haven't read it, you kind of know the story. It's really just leaked into popular culture. And it's something that, you know, because you have these boys who crash on an island and devolve into savagery, it's influenced everything from the Hunger Games to Battle Royale to there was a show on Prime Video called The Wilds recently that featured both boys and girls crashing on an island. There's a show called Yellow Jackets that I think is very heavily influenced by it as well. You see it kind of seep into everything.
All right, because when I set you up to talk about this, for some reason, my mind went to Lord of the Rings. And I'm like, aren't there dragons in Lord of the Rings?
There are dragons in Lord of the Rings. That is a fantasy thing. Lord of the Flies.
Okay.
Lord of the Rings. But they're both British. There's a lot of British actors, so there is that connection there.
Well, I heard on a news station that there was this giant new guardian. It's a 70-foot-long steel fire-breathing dragon that is the largest steel-fabricated dragon in the world, and it just kind of was on display in the Wisconsin Dells. And this sculptor, Kevin Stone, spent 20 months building this creature in Las Vegas before shipping it to the Wisconsin Dells on three large trucks. It weighs about 22,000 pounds. So they were in the final stages this week of putting the dragon together. And I had looked that up so I could tell you about the world's largest dragon, and it has nothing to do with Lord of the Flies. So that's my brain this morning.
I think I can connect it back. Lord of the Flies is written by Jack Thorne, who also wrote the stage play Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which has dragons as well. So
oh,
there you go. So
look at it all comes full circle, does it not? All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some other shows you might be interested in as we continue talking TV with Alex Zalbin. If you'd like to check out his podcast, Comic Book Club, you can go to comicbookclublive.com. All right, 312-981-7200. If you'd like to talk TV with us, we're here for you. Yes, we're talking TV with Alex Zalbin. It's Wendy Snyder here. And what song was that used as the theme for? What TV show?
Supernatural, for sure.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I mean, maybe you're thinking of something else.
No. It's so funny. I just wanted to say that you and Neil Fisher, our producer, should go out and have lunch together, because he's like, let's try and stump Alex, and you were unstumpable.
No, that was at the end of every season of Supernatural. They would kick off the finale with like a 5-minute recap of the journey so far, play Carry On My Wayward Son, and it was always very epic. So there you go.
I'll buy the coffee, Alex, when we meet. I'll buy the coffee.
All right, sounds good.
It's just so funny. You both, it was like you're twinsies. You know, Neil's like, play this and see if he knows. And then right away, you just regurgitated exactly what he said and you didn't hear it. All right, I never watched Supernatural. That was a good one?
For a while.
Yeah.
There are about 15 seasons of Supernatural that has an enormous fan base. I watched the first 5 seasons.
I was going to say the first 5 are the best, and then you don't need to watch anymore.
The first 5. See, you're both twinsies. I never saw it. I never even really heard of it. I'm sorry. I don't. Is it worth watching the first 5?
Yeah, I think it's worth checking out. It stars Jensen Ackles and Jared Padalecki as two brothers who drive around killing and hunting monsters. It's fun. It's fast. It's quirky. It's from Eric Kripke, who is the showrunner of The Boys, and he's done a bunch of other things. And, again, for the first 5 seasons, he had a 5-season story idea it wraps up nicely, and then it kept going for another 10 seasons. So make of that what you will. Obviously, it was a huge hit, but I had a lot of fun with it. It's quirky. They're weird. It's good.
All right. Well, now that I know that Jensen Ackles is in it, because that's what Neil was telling me. Again, he's telling me in my headset what you were saying on the air. And Jensen Ackles is in The Boys. I didn't know his name. I love this guy. He is very nice looking, although I'm telling you, again, The Boys is not my typical show that I would like, but I love it. It's gross. It's funny. It's great. It's kind of showing you that superheroes aren't great. It's kind of politically what's going on in the world, would you say?
Yeah, it's all of that. And it's funny. It's gross. It's smartly done. It's very meta about the whole boom of superhero TV shows. And I imagine part of the reason for the Supernatural discussion is Eric Kripke has been peppering actors from Supernatural throughout the season. But without getting into too many spoilers, Jensen Ackles has been a big part of this season in particular. And last week's episode had a mini Supernatural reunion with Jared Padalecki and Maisha Collins, who was a big part of the show, showing up as new characters. And I will say, as somebody who did watch a lot of Supernatural, very weird to see them playing extremely different, extremely raunchy roles together. And I saw a clip of Jensen Ackles talking about it. He said it was the same thing, that it was so strange, the three of them being on set and not being their characters from Supernatural. So a lot of fun for fans.
Can I just tell you, they give him the worst dialogue on that show. It's just like he's just this misogynistic jerk. And everything he says, I'm like, oh, come on, you can do better.
It's awful. And the thing that works nicely, I think, about the show is it's clear that these are awful people saying awful things. It's not anything that the show agrees with or is saying, yeah, this is cool in any way. There have been a lot of people. There's a character called Homelander on the show who is the evil Superman of that universe. And there's a section of the fan base, and it's very strange, who has completely misinterpreted his actions and look at it as like, oh, cool, he's killing somebody again, when it's explicitly bad and everything he's doing is bad. So curious to watch the show from that perspective. But you know, like you were saying, very smart, very funny, definitely for adults only. If you're an MCU fan or anything like that, don't sit down with the kids and watch this one, because it gets incredibly explicit.
Yeah, and like Homelander to me is one of the best villains I've seen in such a long time. And the Deeps character, I mean, he's so hateable, but he's so great at that role.
They're both fantastic. Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander, is, you're absolutely right, turning in an all-time TV performance here. And Chase Crawford, who people might know from Gossip Girl and other things, plays the Deep as, again, just a completely unrepentant jerk. It's very funny because right before I got on here, I was idly scrolling through TikTok, and I got to Chase Crawford's TikTok account where he was just very earnestly making chicken for Sunday night dinner, and I was like, oh, this is the diametric opposite of what you're doing on TV.
It's really a lot, but I don't know, if you give it a chance, and it's just highly entertaining. And of course, Huey Campbell is played by Jack Quaid, whose parents are Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan, and he just got married to one of his co-stars.
Yeah, he did, which is great. Love in the time of The Boys. That's what we got here.
Yes. And it's not his love interest on the show, which was weird. I mean, you know, if you're on set and you see your new husband making out with someone else, I guess that's just acting. What are you going to do? All right. Citadel. What is this?
Well, you'd be forgiven for not remembering this, because the last time it came out was 2023. This is one of the most expensive television series ever made. It was produced by the Russo brothers, who people probably know from the Avengers movies and some of the Captain America movies. But it is about two spies played by Richard Madden from Game of Thrones and Priyanka Chopra from, oh, you probably know her from a lot of places in life, as two spies who have their mind wiped Jason Bourne style and have to get it back. They discover they're spies.
The first season was okay, and it had two all right spinoffs, an Italian version and an Indian version that do tie back in. We are finally getting a second season on Prime Video. It's all seven episodes debuting on May 6th. The big exciting thing for me is Matt Berry is showing up as a new character in the next season, and I'll watch anything he does. So that's the selling point right there.
And he, of course, from the What We Do in the Shadows, right?
Yes, and just being very funny and doing almost every animated voice as well. He's just, you always know when he shows up because Matt Berry is always Matt Berry.
And did I see something that Flight of the Conchords, it's not coming back, but they're getting together, those two wonderful men are getting together for some comedy festival somewhere? Did you hear that?
I believe they recently did a comeback show.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking it up right now, but yeah, they are actually going to be touring around. They're doing a couple of gigs in California later on this week and over the weekend. So I don't know if you have listeners in Los Angeles or Santa Barbara, but you can check them out.
I wish they'd come to Chicago. Jermaine Clement and Brett McKenzie, they're just so funny. That show Flight of the Conchords was just something I absolutely adored. The Other Bennett Sister, what is this?
This is what I'm very excited about. I haven't had a chance to see this yet, but everybody that I've talked to said glowing things. It is a reappraisal of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice from the perspective of one of the other Bennett sisters. It premiered internationally with 10 episodes, and everybody loved it. Enormous hit there. It drove tourism to different Jane Austen sites. And now it might be a little tough for people to watch it here, but it's going to be debuting on BritBox on Wednesday. Now, if you don't know what BritBox is, that's okay. You can probably figure it out from the name, but it is a British TV streaming service. And if you do want to get it, probably the easiest way is on Prime Video. You can subscribe to it as an additional channel. So it's all, I believe three of the episodes are going to be streaming on Wednesday. So if you want to try it out, they probably have a way of trying it out on Prime Video to check it out. But apparently the show is fantastic.
A trial?
Yes, a trial. That's what I was looking for. My goodness.
All right. A new action series now streaming on Netflix. Tell us about Man on Fire.
Sure. This is an adaptation of the book. You may also know it as the 2004 movie, I want to say, that starred Denzel Washington, about a ex-Special Forces agent who's protecting a young kid. This is a little different. The kid has been very much aged up, and he has a whole team around him. But it stars Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who was recently Wonder Man for Marvel. He's also been in the Aquaman movies. He was in the Watchmen series on HBO. He is utterly fantastic, watchable in anything. So this is all streaming on Netflix now. So if you're looking for a good, solid action series, this is one to check out.
Okay, and what about a horror-comedy combo?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite new shows called Widow's Bay that just premiered on Apple TV. It's created by Katie Dippold, who's written a bunch of Paul Feig movies. It is set in a small New England town where the mayor, played by Matthew Rhys, really wants it to be the next Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard. Unfortunately, the whole place is cursed. So every episode you get a horror trope. The first episode, there's a killer fog that's taking people. The second episode, I'm actually blanking on what the second episode is, but there's sea hags, there's slashers who show up. It's very funny at the same time as it leans into real horror. Stephen Root, who is great in everything, is in it. And there's a woman named Kate O'Flynn who plays the mayor's assistant. And she is just one of the funniest people I've ever seen. I've never seen her in anything before, but she absolutely steals the show. First two episodes are on Apple TV now, and then it's going to be streaming one episode a week from there. Well worth your time.
Okay, and some listener wants to know about Reacher on Prime, one of my favorites. When is the next set of episodes going to air from Reacher? That text is from 815. I don't know much. I've heard of it. I don't know what it is exactly.
Yeah, Reacher is a
I was about to say the concept of the show is he's an enormous man, but that's sort of the joke. He's played by Alan Ritchson, who is huge. He goes from town to town, not exactly solving mysteries, but dealing with problems. It is based on a series of books, and it has been renewed for a fourth season, which is going to be based on the 13th novel in the series. There's also a spinoff series coming. I don't actually know when the fourth season will premiere, but it's been coming out semi-regularly. So without, you know, getting too ahead of my skis, I would say there's a chance we could see the fourth season later this year, but more likely sometime in 2027.
All right. Well, thank you, 815, for jumping in there. And then 773, I think you will really love Supernatural. My husband and I just finished the last season. It took us about 3 years to watch from start to finish, but it's great. It shows such a strong family bond and love with some codependency, but I'm so sad now that we're finished watching it. And that happens. I saw, like, when you finish a good book, it's like, oh, that stinks. All right. Well, yeah. Thank you for chatting with us. I am filling in for Bob Surratt tomorrow and Tuesday, and you're going to join me in the 8 o'clock hour. So thank you for that. We'll talk TV again.
Talk to you tomorrow, Wendy.
All right. I like saying that, Alex. All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Alex Zalbin, he is host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. It's been running a long time, and you can go to comicbookclublive.com.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
I love this band, ELO and Telephone Line. It's Wendy Snyder here on Sunday morning, soon to be Sunday afternoon. And, all right, Telephone Line, I was talking to our producer, Neil, about a crazy thing happened to you.
Yeah, I love watching movies that have blood or action or thrillers. My wife does not. So a lot of the time I will watch these movies in 15-minute increments while she's taking a bath or whatever. So I was watching a film on Netflix that just came out called Apex that had Charlize Theron and Taron Egerton. And it's a very, you know, 90s-type thriller, survivalist-type movie. And the first 20 minutes or so, with no spoilers here, Charlize's character is sleeping in a tent that is bolted to the side of a mountain. So think thousands of feet up in the air. And I thought to myself, this is very far-fetched. No one does this. There's no way people are sleeping in tents thousands of feet up in the air in a mountain and looking over it with glee. And I was not talking to anyone. I was sitting on the couch by myself thinking these thoughts. After the film was over, I opened up TikTok, and the second video that was on my feed was someone sleeping in one of those tents bolted to the side of a mountain.
Okay, that is freaky.
Very freaky. And the second comment was, this is just like that movie Apex.
And you sure you didn't say anything out loud?
I was completely silent watching this movie, and I did not say anything. So it like either read my mind, heard the movie on the TV, and you know, talk to my algorithm or something. But I got my answer, which I was satisfied with, but I felt a little creeped out, I'm going to be honest.
It is such a weird thing, and I did some research here. Can phones read our thoughts? You know, that's what I Googled. And it says, no, your phone cannot literally read your mind or access your thoughts directly. The mind-reading feeling comes from sophisticated AI, vast data aggregation, and pattern recognition, which makes predictions about your interests remarkably accurate. While technology exists to decode brain signals, it's not used in commercial smartphones, at least not yet, anyway. So perhaps it did pick up the dialogue of the movie going on, because it's so weird to think about. Your phone just sits there, and I swear that's happened to me, too. I have thought about something, but it must have been because something was playing on TV or something, so then I thought about it.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that's possible, too, is I know sometimes people will maybe look on Amazon for, say, a pair of shoes or something, and then all of a sudden their Instagram is full of shoe ads.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't even remember. Maybe I looked on IMDb and said, oh, who's the cinematographer? Who's the director of this film? And maybe that's what did it as well.
And then the predictive algorithms, I don't know how algorithms work, but your phone tracks everything. So any searches, locations, any apps you've used, and time spent on specific content. And it builds this profile so advanced that it can sometimes predict what you might think of next. I get that because sometimes I'll be looking for planters for my indoor mm-hmm. plants, and then all of a sudden all the ads on Facebook are for plant stores or something.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, I get that, but then I go down this rabbit hole, and it could also be contributed to something called the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. Ba-bee-da-dee-dee phenomenon. Ba-bee-dee-beep. Phenomena. Do you know what the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, I don't know, I can't even say it, phenomenon is?
I remember like something about frequency illusion used in, you know, in trivia games I've played,
yes.
But I don't know what it actually is.
All right, well, I was intrigued by this, so it sent me down the rabbit hole. It is the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, or frequency illusion, as Neil said. It's a cognitive bias where after noticing a new word, an idea, or an object, you suddenly encounter it all the time. And it's not an increase in actual frequency, but rather a combination of selective attention, where you notice it more, and confirmation bias, which believing it's everywhere. It was a phrase coined in 1994 by Terry Mullen, who noticed the Bader-Meinhof gang name twice in quick succession after learning about it, and later termed frequency illusion by linguist Arnold Zwicky in 2005. So this is a relatively new thing. How it works is once your brain recognizes a new stimulus, it filters for it. It highlights it in your daily life while ignoring when it was unseen before. So it's like you're hyper aware of it. Your brain subconsciously highlights information it deems relevant, making you notice items that in the past you may have ignored. Isn't that fascinating?
The brain is so fascinating. I'm guessing now, you know, when I bought my car a few years ago, I had never really seen any of them on the road, but now I see them all the time. That must be what it is. I'm noticing it all the time now, you know, just on the road.
What kind of car do you have?
Just a Buick Encore GX, like a little midsize SUV, but I'd never seen one before, and I thought, oh, I'm getting a deal. No one really has this car, and now I just see it everywhere. So maybe that's the Bader-Meinhof.
Yeah, it fascinates me so much. So, yeah, your brain subconsciously highlights information that it deems relevant, and, you know, when you were looking for a new car, that was important to you, because I judge the faces of a car.
Oh, right, yep, yep.
Okay, good. I'm glad to know it's not just me. You know, the headlights, they make a face.
They do, yeah.
And right now I'm driving a Subaru Outback, and there are Subarus everywhere. I will say that. But I didn't really notice them before until I had one, and that's because I was looking around trying to think, what friendly face on a car do I want? And so, yeah, it's selective attention. And then the confirmation bias is you perceive the frequent appearance as evidence that the thing is actually appearing more often, which reinforces that illusion. It may not be, but you're more aware of it, so you focus in on it more. I just thought that was really cool. It makes new information seem more common or relevant than it actually is. It can influence buying habits. I am so suggestible. That is so true.
Yeah.
Like when we talk about food on the show, it's like, I want to go home and get it. Which, by the way, after 12 noon, I'm going to give this recipe of the salad that I talked about at the very beginning of the show, because a lot of people have been wanting the recipe, and it's super easy. And I realized when I was making it, I said, oh, it's this crazy salad I love. And my husband misconstrued that and said, oh, it's a psycho salad. And now I love it. So now I think I'm just going to call it a psycho salad.
I love it. Yeah, get a little, Joe Strummer, maybe, back in the music there?
A psycho salad. All right. So this Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, or frequency illusion, is, I don't know. I don't know what happened with your phone, but they can't really read your mind yet.
I mean, maybe we should all collectively, after we're done here today on today's show, you know, Eli as well, we walk home, or go to our car, and just keep saying, I'm going to be a millionaire soon. I'm going to be a millionaire soon. And then maybe we'll get a check in the mail from the Bader Meinhof. I don't know.
Manifest it.
Manifest it. Yeah, exactly.
Does that work, the manifesting things?
I don't know. Eli, what do you think? You manifested big biceps, and you have a sleeveless shirt on today, so I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Sun's out, guns out, so I guess it does work.
All right. Shwani, I don't know if you read this book. Did you ever read The Secret? It was on Oprah's book club, and everybody...
No, I remember it, but I did not read it, no.
Neil, Eli, did you guys ever read The Secret?
No, I did it for kind of research, just kind of, you know, little comedic writing, but I never actually, like, kind of got through it for real.
I can't say I've read it.
All right. It's about really putting things out there in the universe. I love Oprah. I really do. I will never stop loving her. I didn't watch her show for the longest time the last few years she was on, but I still love her. And she talked about this book, The Secret. And this is coming full circle. We're going to talk to Tanner Mitchell, who is Tanner the Planter. We're going to talk to him in about 10 minutes after the 11:30 news. So if you have any indoor plant questions, just indoor only, he's the guy to talk to. I think next week we'll talk to the Chicago Tomato Man, because we're going to all start planting our tomatoes pretty soon. But Tanner said that when he was younger, he read the book The Secret. And he said he put it out there and tried to manifest it that someday he would write a book. And he'll tell the story when we talk to him. But he said that he didn't know what it was going to be about, but he said, someday I am going to write a book. And he started doing these TikTok videos about plant tips. And 4 years later, Simon & Schuster, a pretty big publishing company, reached out to him and said, hey, would you be interested in putting a plant book together for us? So he really credits The Secret, and I have it somewhere in my crawl space, and now I want to read it again and manifest something, but I don't know what I want. I don't want to waste it on something.
Well, maybe you just got to keep scrolling your phone. It'll tell you what you want, apparently.
Yes, I guess. The Secret is by Rhonda Byrne, a best-selling self-help book that popularizes the law of attraction. It's a pseudo-scientific belief that positive or negative thoughts bring positive or negative experience into a person's life. It was published in 2006. It explains a three-step process: ask, believe, and receive, to manifest desires like health, wealth, and happiness by using the power of thought to attract similar energy. So now I'm liking your whole idea about we're going to win the lottery or something.
Now, speaking of The Secret, actually, have you ever heard of the black coffee theory?
Mm-mm.
So this happens to me all the time. I don't know if folks at home who are texting, but the black coffee theory, from what I understand, basically says that what you put out in the universe sometimes will happen. So if you go to a coffee shop, the story is a person goes in and they go to the barista. Hey, I'm really, really, you know, needing caffeine. I just don't want anything but a black coffee, please. I want a latte or a cappuccino, just anything but a black coffee. It's very busy in the store. The barista says, okay, anything but a black coffee, please. The barista is busy, goes to change over the coffee machine or whatever, comes back and hands the customer a black coffee, because that's all the customer kept saying and that's all the barista could hear was, I don't want a black coffee, but it turned into black coffee.
That totally works on my husband. Jimmy Mac, every time he goes to the store, it will be like, you know, I can't even remember now, but it was like, get oven brown turkey breast. Don't get the smoked. Don't get the smoked. And then he comes home with the smoked. And he says to me, don't tell me what you don't want, because for some reason that sticks out more.
Yeah. And apparently, you know, they talk about, if you constantly think and talk about things you don't want, you know, whether it's failure, stress, or a bad relationship, that you unconsciously move towards that. And it's just the same thing with the brain, like we're talking about. It's just really weird how the brain is wired, and it you know, projects you over to those areas.
I love it. I think it's so cool. Our brains are something else, man. A texter has said, 815, I've been having this phenomena happening a lot lately. Not speaking out loud thoughts, feelings, songs, etc. But yet I start seeing things on my phone exactly from my thoughts. And it is unnerving. That's a perfect word for it. Weird synchronicity lately. It's really been happening. But yes, your phone is listening 24/7. I understand that. Just think about your phone listening while you pay your bills on speakerphone. But I don't have really anything to hide. Obviously, if you listen to me on the radio, you know that pretty much. I don't hide anything. I'm an open book. And so it's not like I'm committing crimes or anything. And I don't care if somebody tracks me because I'm not, you know, doing something wrong or at a bad place. But it is kind of when my boys are in their 20s and they cover their phones sometimes when they're talking.
Oh.
When we got a new TV, it's a long time ago now, but there was a camera on the top of it. And the first thing one of my boys did was put the camera behind it. So I guess I have nothing to hide. But it's weird. It's weird when you don't say something and then all of a sudden it pops up. That's really weird.
And we talked earlier. I mean, if it helps you, I guess it's not bad. But if it is something a little more unnerving, then maybe that's when it's, you know, time to fall, you know, send the alarm.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. All right. Well, I got to find that secret book because it's still available. It sold millions of copies, spawned a series of related books. The book grew from a documentary film. Now I got to watch the documentary film. That is fascinating. But we'll talk to Tanner the Planter about this because he was so touched by it, too. He said that, you know, he read the book and it meant so much to him, and he hopes his book means that much to people, and it was really sweet. So if you have any indoor plant questions, Tanner Mitchell, also known as Tanner the Planter, will be on with us. And the Bader, I'm going to look this up too, Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. It's otherwise known as frequency illusion. And we were talking about dreams earlier. I want to try and get that listener called and said she had a dream master. Does anybody know what a dream master is? Someone who interprets dreams? I guess
some sort of an analyst of dreams, tells you what they're supposed to signify or the symbolism in them, things like that.
I just Googled it, and the first thing that popped up was A Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
I know, me too. It's like Freddy is the Dream Master. Is that Freddy or Jason?
Guess.
I can never...
That's Freddy.
All right.
That is Freddy, yep.
Well, yeah, a Dream Master, what... I can't find out what it is. But remember that listener called at the very beginning of the show?
Yeah.
She was talking about her snake dreams and how they were actually kind of leading her to good things and different pathways in her life. And then when the snake finally bit her in her dream, she lost her job that she had for 10 years. We were talking about cars. We're kind of all over the board today, but that's okay. James, you have a car question?
No, I have one for you.
Okay.
I want to know if you've noticed it. I'm starting to notice it more and more, but cars with eyelashes or eyebrows.
Yeah, what's wrong with people?
Have you seen that?
Yes, I have seen it.
I thought I was going Lulu. It's like, and now it's like when we're out, it's like there goes another one. Is that some kind of whatever?
Yeah,
it's very strange.
People are decorating their cars kind of like the deer antlers around Christmas time. You see those sometimes too.
Yeah, that or a lit up wreath on the grill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something else.
They do red noses too.
Oh, the red noses. Yeah. You've seen those. Although I've only seen eyelashes, James. I haven't seen the eyebrows, but I will be on the lookout. And when I said cars have faces, I didn't mean that. I meant the headlights.
Okay.
You haven't.
Yeah, that's what they're on. That's what they're on. They're around the headlights.
Yeah.
It's like mascara on a car. I don't, whatever.
What is this world coming to, James? I'll tell
you. There you go. All right. Well, got a good show going there.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope you keep listening. And by the way, listeners, if you want to give your mom a moment in the spotlight, we here at WGN are looking for stories for our Moms Who Shine giveaway. Every day this week, Lisa Dent will be reading a winning submission during her show and awarding a daily prize from State Street Jewelers to help the mom in your life keep shining. So if you have a mom you'd like to join in on this, just send an email with a little bit of her story to entries@WGNradio.com. That's entries@WGNradio.com. And don't forget to include your contact information. Lisa will need that. Lisa's going to start reading the winners tomorrow, May 4th. Oh, may the 4th be with you. So get those emails in today. Again, if you'd like to nominate your mom of why she is Moms Who Shine. That's what we're looking for. And I hope my boys are listening, and I hope they nominate me. Entries@WGNradio.com. All right, vegetables, plants, all indoor stuff. We are going to talk to Tanner the planter right now. Tanner Mitchell joins us, and I'm Wendy Snyder. Bob Surratt is such a goof. Can I just say that? That was the funniest promo ever. Tanner, were your ears burning? Because I was talking about you earlier before we got you on the air. I was talking about you reading The Secret and manifesting the fact that you were going to write a book someday. And lo and behold, you are now a best-selling author. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for having us on again. Yeah, my ears have been burning left and right for the past couple of weeks since its release.
Yes, for the love of houseplants. It was just such a touching video of how, you know, you manifested that, and that book, The Secret, meant so much to you, and you hope your book means so much to people. I'm telling you right now, that is my encyclopedia. I turn to that so frequently. It is just a great resource. It really is. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. That just tickled me to hear that, because that's exactly what we were going for. Just a really easy, beginner-friendly encyclopedia so that people could enjoy their plants like I've enjoyed my plants for the past several years.
Yeah, you do such a great job, and you are the co-founder of Famous in Oregon, a thriving houseplant business. It's in Texas. You run it alongside your wife, Erica, and you have helped so many people with their houseplant care and education. I'm telling you, dude, I watch your videos, and they're just so informative. How to repot things, when to repot things, why you repot things. Just amazing. Listeners, 312-981-7200 is the number to call if you have any plant questions. And someone texted in and said they wouldn't be able to call, but here's a question for you, Tanner. 847 says, I cannot call, but my indoor plants were covered with ants. I put outside. What do I do? Ants on inside plants? Does that usually happen?
It doesn't usually happen. Usually the reason that it would happen is when we keep our plants outside for a stint. Like here in Texas, and I'm sure like you guys do up in Chicago and all over the United States, sometimes we keep our plants outside during the spring and summer months when it's really warm, and that way ants can sort of inhabit the soil. And then sometimes when we bring them inside, they still kind of just colonize in there and live in there. And so we discover them when the problem kind of takes over. My favorite thing to do is just, if it's in the spring especially, go ahead and change out the soil. Go ahead and do a repot. That's like the easiest way to get rid of all your ants. If you don't want to repot your plant, maybe it's not ready or maybe it's not the best time of year to do it, I like to take a neem oil solution. Now, this is important. Cold pressed organic neem oil is the most potent version of neem oil. You don't want the pre-diluted stuff. Make yourself up a fresh mixture and water your plant with that neem oil mixture, and that will get rid of your ants over a period of a few weeks.
That's amazing. I'll be perfectly honest with you, Tanner. I just kind of got into houseplants probably about a year and a half ago. And honestly, you have paved the way because I would watch you and I'm like, okay, well, I can just get a plant. And now I think I have like 46. I don't put any of them outside because I don't want to bring bugs in, but I'm probably depriving them of a wonderful summer outside and stunting their growth a little, aren't I?
Well, maybe just a little bit. That's why we like to keep our plants outside, is that it just supercharges their growth. They love the full shade, that extra bright light, that warmth that really gets the most growth out of your houseplants during that season. And they actually do better once you bring them inside for the winter months. They're able to survive our shorter and darker days of winter when they have that spring and summer with that, you know, excessive light or that extra light that they may not get during the, you know, when they're in your house.
So what do you do then, like when you bring them back in the fall, do you just spray insecticidal soap or something and to make sure you're not bringing any pests in?
Well, believe it or not, I have lots of videos on this because, yeah, every fall we bring our plants back in. And what I do is, first of all, the easiest thing to do is just hose them all down. You get, you know, your hose out, you spray the backs of the leaves, the fronts of the leaves, the stems, the trunks, whatever you've got. And that's going to take off most of the bugs because bugs can't really withstand a harsh stream of water, you know, like the shower setting on your hose nozzle. And then you can use your favorite insecticidal soap, your neem oil, your Systemica, whatever it is, spray it down all the leaves front and back, and then bring it inside after it dries. But in fact, this is something that I always teach, though, is that oftentimes putting your plant outside is actually going to give your plant less bugs, at least less detrimental bugs, the bad bugs. Because what happens when you put your plants outside, not only do you have the potential for, you know, the bad bugs like spider mites and mealybugs, et cetera, et cetera. But the bugs that eat those bad bugs are also out there.
Oh.
And they're able to find them usually before even you are. So very often, like if we get a pest, you know, if we get a pest on our plant during the spring and summer months when it's warm, the first thing I do is just put it outside. And then all of those predators will come and eat those bugs and take care of the problem. And I don't have to touch the plant at all.
Do you have a botany degree or something? Because you are just amazing.
I'm just obsessed, Wendy. I'm just obsessed.
Good answer. All right. We have Al from Homewood who has a question for you. Hi, Al. We're talking to Tanner the planter.
Hi. I have a Monstera plant that was gifted to me that is pretty healthy and with new growth, but some of the plant has been eaten by my cat. And then there's a woody stalk on it. And, hey, I want to kind of get it healthier and shaped up better, and wonder if putting it outside, as you're talking about, would be good for it, repotting it, and maybe cutting off some of that stuff that my cat has enjoyed.
Yeah, you know, right now is the perfect time to do that. My recommendation is to keep your plant in full shade. Where the Monstera grows out in nature, they grow under the canopies of trees. That's because they're climbers, so they actually climb up trees to try to compete for light. And so by keeping them in full shade, you're going to avoid burning them. And this is also the perfect time to repot your plant because the spring and summer, we have our longest days. And the number one thing that's going to help your plant recover from the shock of a transplant is light. And so those longer days are really going to help the plant recover. I'd say it's a perfect time to take it outside, again, in full shade, do that repot, keep it out there in full shade. But the one thing I have to remind people is, your watering habits may change because indoors, your plant is going to dry out more slowly than it will outdoors. So you're going to have to water more frequently if you do keep it outside.
Great advice.
One more question. When I go to repot, do I do some root pruning or just go to a bigger pot?
Well, that's going to depend on you. It's perfectly fine either way. If you want to keep the plant smaller, if you want to keep it in a smaller pot just because maybe you don't have a lot of space indoors, then yeah, pruning off about 25% of those bottom roots is going to be perfectly fine and then put it back into that same size pot. But if you have some room to grow within your house and you want it to grow larger, up the pot size by about 2 inches. And then let it grow out throughout the spring and summer. Bring it back in before it drops below 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and you're all set to go.
Awesome. Thanks, Wendy, for always having the plant talk on Sundays.
You're welcome. Thank you, Al. Good luck to you. And, I might wait, maybe a couple of weeks. Tanner, it's still been pretty chilly here in Chicago. Our temperatures have been, we're not really springtime temperatures yet. So usually around Mother's Day is when people plant their tomatoes, which is next weekend. I'm going to put off planting and bringing my stuff outside till maybe Memorial Day, right? Is that the one coming up? Yes, Memorial Day. We have more questions. Are you cool with time?
Please, yes.
All right. On. We're going to take a quick break, and then if you have any indoor plant questions, this is the man who has a plan, and he will answer the questions you have. I'm just telling you, you won't be able to stump him. 312-981-7200 at 720 WGN. Hello. Welcome to a Sunday. It's Wendy Snyder here, and we are talking to Tanner Mitchell, Tanner the Planter. He is a best-selling author. His book, For the Love of Houseplants, you got, like, top of the heap. It went, number one?
It went number one in a lot of categories. It became a USA Today bestseller, means that it was, like, number 96 out of 45 million books or something like that available in the world. So it was pretty tremendous.
Oh, God. Congratulations. I told you last week someone texted in and said, Wendy, thank you for having Tanner on. I got his book. He's awesome. And now 630, dear Wendy, I agree. Tanner's book is a great read, teaches so much. So good work there, Tanner.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Suzanne is calling from Florida. All right. We've got Tanner's in Texas. You're in Florida, and I'm here in Chicago. What's going on, Suzanne?
I am trying to grow a moringa tree indoors because I'm going to come up to Chicago. I'm a snowbird. Oh. And it's very hard. It's a beautiful tree. It's called the Tree of Life, a Trim India. And you can eat it. It's just the best tree you could have. You can make tea leaves out of it. And, you know, there's, I don't even know the whole story about it, but I want to have one. So I went to a health place here and they gave me some seeds and I'm not having any luck.
Moringa. Is that
moringa.
The moringa?
Moringa?
M-O-R-I-N-G-A? Yeah.
It's not in. It's not.
Go ahead, Tanner.
Not indoor.
I was going to say, it's not a commonly kept plant indoors. You're going to have much more success with it trying to grow it outside. Because it's not a typical plant that we would keep indoors, I have no experience growing that tree from seed.
Okay. All right. That's, you know, I'm sorry, but I do have a lot of indoor plants here in Florida. I keep them in an enclosed screened area. I have the snake plant and everything, and I do the same thing up north, and I'm going to buy your book and read more about it.
Excellent, Suzanne. You can get it wherever you get your favorite books, and good luck to you. Yeah, I never heard of that moringa tree. Let's go to Janice, who wants to talk about indoor fig tree. Hi, Janice. How are you?
Hi. Tanner, I have a fig tree. It's an indoor. My sister gave me. It's beautiful. It goes in front of my sliders. I have the opposite problem. It actually grows to the ceiling, and I have to constantly prune it down. And I'm wondering if there's any way I can prune it where I can make it more, like, rounded on top and maybe pull the leaves off the bottom and make it grow like a tree-looking tree, or if I'm just going to have to keep it straight up and down and... It grows like crazy, but I don't know what to do. Next time I replant it, it's going to have to go in a barrel. It's so big. I don't know what to do.
Any advice, Tanner?
Okay. Oh, yeah. I've got all the tips for this one. And again, yeah, you have a wonderful problem right here. It sounds like you have a beautiful tree. And I actually love this question. So here's what you're going to do. Okay. So the next time you go to trim it, you want to trim off the top about a third of the tree from the very top. Okay. And okay. Then I want you to do a technique that's called notching, okay? So notching is where you make a cut in between the nodes. And a node is any place along that trunk that a leaf once was or is, okay? And what that's going to do is when you cut down into that trunk until it bleeds that white sap, you're probably familiar with that, you want to make that cut at about a 45-degree angle. And the tree, they are so smart, it's going to fill in that wound with a new leaf, with new branches. And in that way, you can encourage it to grow a canopy instead of that more upright structure that we call in our industry a column, which is where it's just one trunk up and down with all of the leaves right here. And over time, those bottom leaves that you were talking about, now you can prune off about 25% of them at a time, but they will just die off naturally as old age comes about. You know, with time, they will die off, and you'll be left with that bare trunk and that beautiful rounded canopy on top.
I did that notching, Janice, and it totally works, and it's really scary. But it works.
God, I know.
Yeah.
I might have to watch his video first.
Go ahead. Because it does work. It just really, Tanner, we think we're going to kill stuff when we, you know, top it off or do something. But they are really smart, those plants. Good luck to you, Janice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so cool. All right, I think we have time for one more question today. And Jim's calling from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Hey, Jim. Tanner the planter on the line.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
All right. Hey, Tanner, I have a palm tree, okay? And what I'm getting is, I don't know, do you call those leaves or you call them palms?
Are you saying a cat tree?
A palm tree.
No.
Indoor palm tree.
Oh. Yeah, they're fronds.
Oh, okay. Well, at the tips of them, they're starting to get curled and turning brown. Not all of the plant, just some of it.
Okay, well, when you've got browning tips, it's typically a lack of moisture. Now, that could be either lack of moisture in the air or in the soil. And this very much, this happens all the time. I'm not sure which one you have, but this is very common, especially where you live up north, where you have to turn on central heating or you've got a wood-burning fireplace. You have to keep your home warm. And all of the interventions that we use to keep our homes warm sucks that humidity out of the air and dries out our plants really, really quickly, resulting in those brown tips.
Okay. Because I do put it out in the summertime. It's outside on the deck day, all night.
And you don't see brown tips then, do you?
No, I don't. Now that all makes sense.
Can you cut them off, Tanner? Like, just kind of trim it off yourself at the very tip, or no?
Yeah, you can prune them off. And this next winter, what I want you to try out and see if this helps is make sure that no vents are blowing on it. Sometimes we don't realize that our plants are positioned like right under vents and they're getting that airflow just constantly hammering them and drying out that ambient humidity. So make sure it's not getting hammered with that vent. And then maybe try to add a humidifier, or maybe try to group your plants together so that they can create their own little microclimate of sorts, because as their water evaporates through their soil and through their leaves, they can kind of create some nice little ambient humidity where, you know, it could help you prevent some of those more excessive brown tips.
Good luck,
very
Jim.
Good. Yeah, very good. Oh, hey, by the way, I'm going to see Deep Purple. I know you're a Deep Purple
fan. Yeah, rock on, dude.
Yeah, at the Ravinia. Last concert you're probably ever going to see them. So.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully I'll see you there.
All right. Well, have a good time there and rock on. All right. Do you even know who Deep Purple is, Tanner?
I have no idea.
I knew it. Just an old classic rock band, and I do mean old. You had mentioned the notching, and I was so excited that I had actually tried that before. I learned it from you, and it worked with my Ficus Audrey. But I noticed my Ficus Audrey is not dying. It has put out new branches since I notched it, but do they go a little dormant in the winter? Because I've had it a couple of years, and it's really not getting much bigger.
Well, most houseplants, generally speaking, don't really go dormant in the true sense of dormancy. And this is because most houseplants are tropical. And the closer you get to tropical locations, the less variance we have of temperature and number of hours of daylight. And those are the two things that would induce a dormancy. So although they don't have a true dormancy, they do slow down their growth just because we have less hours of daylight. You have to remember that plants are going to put on growth by making sugar. And the number one ingredient to making sugar is sunlight. And so with a lack of sunlight, they have a lack of food, and they recognize this. And so they slow down their growth to accommodate for their lack of food, their lack of sunlight. And so a lot of people will experience this sort of what is supposed as a winter dormancy with their houseplants during the winter.
That is fascinating. And I learned from you, I have a crimson queen Hoya, which I love. I have it hanging in a window. It gets some direct sun, but not for a very long time. And the stems are becoming so pink, and there's beautiful leaves that have turned pink and white. And I learned that those little fronds are like going out there in search of light. And once they find it, leaves grow on them, and it's totally happened, and it's really cool.
Yeah, there's, oh yeah, so they have these like little tendrils.
Yeah.
That will climb, they go out, they're actually searching, actually, believe it or not, what's funny, Wendy, is that they're actually searching for the opposite of light.
Oh.
They're searching for something to climb. And so these plants, again, they're so smart. So imagine this, a seed grows out in nature, a Hoya seed, that's what you're talking about, your crimson queen.
Yeah.
And it falls on the forest floor. Now, it's trying to find something to climb. And so usually out in nature, that's a tree. And so at the very beginning, they actually climb towards darkness.
Ugh.
So they're climbing towards darkness to find something to climb. And then once they go up, that's when they start putting on those leaves. So, yeah, if you have those tendrils on your Hoya, don't cut them off because they're going to fill in with leaves pretty soon.
It's so cool. Yeah, it's climbing up my window. I just love it. I love my plants. I love your book. Somebody just texted in and said, please mention the name of Tanner's book again. I'll let you do it. Go ahead.
It's called For the Love of Houseplants, and it's available anywhere that you get new books. Amazon, of course, has been the most popular, but it's all over just about anywhere you buy books.
And 847, tell Tanner to slap that pot. And we said that before and we've laughed, and it's a great way to, when you're repotting something, you slap that pot because you need the soil to settle around the roots, right?
That's right. I mean, roots need to take up the water and the nutrients that are in the soil every time you water it. So you have to make sure that it comes in contact with the roots. And one of the things that I teach on my repot videos is to slap that pot to settle in the soil.
And then watch them stare into the camera like a goof, because it just makes me laugh every time. Thank you.
Okay, Wendy, you didn't have to mention that, okay?
Listen, thank you so much. It is always such a pleasure to talk to you. You know so much. The book's great, people, and we'll still try to get you out to Chicago sometime.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Wendy.
Tanner the Planter. Find him on social media everywhere. Live plant sales. Order your plants. Get his book and grow stuff, will you? All right. Going the distance, we're going to talk Kentucky Derby right now. It's Wendy Snyder. And joining us is Rowan Ward, freelance horse racing writer, editor, chart caller, and contributor to horseracingnation.com. How's it going, Rowan?
It's going great. How are you?
I missed the whole thing. Neil came in today and said, hey, we can talk to a friend of mine, Rowan Ward, about the Kentucky Derby. And I'm like, oh, when is it? It was yesterday, huh?
It was yesterday, and it was a thriller of a race. I love those come from behind horses. Always very much enjoy watching a closer do their thing, and what a run by Golden Tempo yesterday.
So, yeah, Golden Tempo wins Kentucky Derby. Now, was there something about this being one of the longest races?
Well, yeah, the Kentucky Derby is 10 furlongs or a mile and a quarter, and it's longer than the vast majority of horse races are nowadays, and none of the horses in the Kentucky Derby had ever gone that long.
Wow.
You have a few that have gone a mile and 3/16, including Golden Tempo, who came out of the Louisiana Derby, but they were all trying a mile and a quarter for the first time.
So I did not bet on any horses. We had Arlington racetrack that was here in the Chicago metro area, and it was really fun. I never did very well. I would look at the horses and try and say, oh, they have muscular legs, or try and figure out a way to see who would win. Is there any kind of way you can determine who's going to perform better than the others?
Oh, I love being able to look at the horses in the paddock before the races. I was at Arlington all the time back when that existed, worked there as one of the chart callers for the last few years. Now, I mean, heck, what am I doing after I finish talking to you? I'm going to work at Hawthorne. They're racing at Hawthorne today in Cicero. And if you're looking at horses in the paddock, I like a horse who looks engaged, looks strong, but isn't acting out and jumping all around, you know, kind of like a coiled spring, if you will. Or another thing that I like to see is look how long the race is. If it's a one-turn sprint race, a lot of times just, you know, kind of a more compact muscular sprinter build, if you will, that, you know, that big hind end, that big sprinter butt is something that I look for. Whereas if it's something going a little longer, you know, a more like lean, long distance sort of build is what I look for. So, yeah, it's all, and that's why horse racing live, I like it so much better than on TV, just because you can see the horses, you can get up close to the horses. It feels a lot more close to the horse when you're at the track.
It's pretty exciting, I have to tell you. And these people who own their horses and the jockeys, they love their horses. I mean, you know, there are no more elephants in circuses because they weren't being treated well. These horses, please tell me, are treated wonderfully.
Goodness gracious, I've hung out in the barns, and these horses live better lives than I do.
That's good
to
know.
Like the trainers, the jockeys, the owners, like you don't get into horse racing unless you love horses, unless you love being around horses. And yeah, respect for the horse is what makes it go round.
Absolutely. I just wanted that to be out there so people know. So were you at the Kentucky Derby yesterday?
I was not. Like I said, I have to work at Hawthorne afternoon. And so, you know, some of my coworkers at Horse Racing Nation were at the Kentucky Derby, and I was providing support from here, you know, doing writing, doing editing, had a reliable internet connection just in case, you know, sometimes on big days, the internet can get a little goofy on site at the racetrack. Seemed to be fine from Churchill yesterday, but you never know. So yeah, I was remote support, if you will, but I watched the Derby on TV, and it was a historic race for several reasons. You know, top of all being, it's the first time a woman trainer has won the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, baby, I love it. Girls rule.
Yes, Cherie DeVoe.
Okay, and that is the owner of Golden Tempo.
Well, Trainer.
I'm sorry. Yes, Trainer.
Yes.
Okay, that's awesome. What other fast facts and fun facts do we need to know about either Golden Tempo, or you mentioned some other historical things that happened? Please share, because as I mentioned, I thought it was today.
No, it is. I mean, it is the first Saturday in May, unless something weird like the COVID pandemic happens. So it was yesterday. Cherie DeVoe becoming the first woman to train a Kentucky Derby winner, and only the second woman to train a Triple Crown race winner after Jenna Antonucci trained Arcangelo in 2023. Huh. Those are your two women who have trained Triple Crown race winners. It is also the first time that brothers have finished 1-2 as the jockeys. You had Jose Ortiz, who rode Golden Tempo, and then his brother, Rod Ortiz Jr., rode Renegade, who ran an amazing race to be second. He had a nasty trip from the rail draw in that big field. So great race by both of them.
What's the sibling rivalry like in that family?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure it's intense, but they're both two of the best jockeys in the game. And let's just say it's not the first time that the Ortiz brothers have gone 1-2 in a big race. Just the first time it's happened in the Kentucky Derby. Because, you know, a lot of times they're riding at the same track. They've both done a lot of riding, particularly in New York for years. Jose's branching out a little bit now. You see him more in, you know, Kentucky fairgrounds, various places. Fairgrounds being the track in New Orleans where Golden Tempo did all of his preps. But
they've ridden against each other a lot at Saratoga, Breeders' Cup, Keeneland, like the best of the best.
Which one's taller and which one weighs more? Because they're a little tiny, those jockeys.
What's funny is I don't know their heights off the top of their head, but I know where to find that information. So.
You know everything. Any any other little tidbits? Was Golden Tempo favored to win?
Oh, Golden Tempo was not favored to win at all.
I like that.
Golden Tempo was, no, he was a nice long shot. He was 23-1.
Ooh, nice payout.
Because he paid out very nicely. You know, for a $2 win bet, he paid $48.24. The second place Renegade was one of the shorter prices. He was actually the second shortest price in the field. He was 5-1. And then the third place horse, Ocelli, I swear, I spent most of the stretch run yesterday screaming over and over again, Ocelli's not about to break his maiden in the Derby. No way Ocelli's about to break his maiden in the Derby, because he was up front for a good chunk of the stretch run. He was a 70-1 long shot, longest shot in the field. He's never won a horse race in his life.
This is crazy.
Called a maiden.
All right. Now, what's next? The Preakness is next?
The Preakness is next. The Preakness is 2 weeks from yesterday. As of this morning, Cherie DeVoe has not confirmed whether Golden Tempo is going to the Preakness or not. She said that she's taking Golden Tempo back to the base at Keeneland, which is a track in Kentucky. Going to just, you know, do some light jogging for the next couple days. And if he's come out of everything okay, then she'll make the decision as to whether to run in the Preakness.
Somebody just texted in, and like I said, I didn't see it, but 219 wants to know, a horse fell right before the start of the Derby yesterday?
Yes, what happened, it was behind the gate. They were in the process of loading, and Great White, who is a very well-named horse, by the way, just this absolutely enormous tank of a gray horse, got riled up. I mean, it happens. There's 150,000 people there. It's loud. It's chaos. It's chaos that these three-year-old horses have never seen to that extent. And he reared up and what's called flipped, went over. And, you know, the good news is like he was out there on the track and the dirt surface is, you know, it's designed for horses to run on. It's a lot more cushiony than, say, if the horse was in the paddock. And I watched him. They showed him on TV jogging back away from the gate, and it looked like he was fine. And sure enough, I've seen several reports from John Ennis, his trainer, that he came out of it okay. Alex Achard, the jockey who was on him, came out of it okay. I feel so bad for Alex Achard specifically because it was supposed to be his first time riding in the Kentucky Derby, and they had to scratch. But obviously, if a horse flips before the race, better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
The horse is not going to run, but from everything I've seen, he's okay, and he will be back to run another day, which is great, because one, you always want the horses to be, you know, to be good, to be healthy, to be happy, and two, Great White had become such a fan favorite leading into the Kentucky Derby, just because he's huge and gorgeous, and I get it. I'm such a sucker for those big old tank horses. I'm such a sucker for gray horses. Great White is adorable.
You know, my sister has a horse, and I go to the barn sometimes to see her Tess. Tess is the horse's name. And their heads are so big, they really scare me. When all these little head, well, not little, these giant heads are just looking out of their stalls as I'm walking by, and it kind of freaks me out a little bit. Those things are giant.
Oh, horses, yeah, they're huge, but also just, I think they're so cute. Like, their noses are so fuzzy. Every horse in a barn has their own personality. And just getting to know the different racehorses and their different personalities just makes me so happy. It's really my favorite thing of being around the track is just, I don't know, meeting the horses and
you know, especially meeting one who just, you know, clicks with you for whatever reason, yeah, or is just the perfect kind of goofball.
Yeah, and they are goofballs. They all have their own personalities. You did mention Great White was scratched for the Kentucky Derby. Is there another race Great White will be participating in?
His trainer, John Ennis, hasn't announced where Great White is going to come back. There are obviously plenty of races. There's, you know, in the Triple Crown, there's the Preakness and the Belmont. And there are stakes races for three-year-olds all through the summer and into the early fall. The Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont are obviously, like, the biggest and best known. But in addition to there being the different regional derbies, if you will, as prep races for the Kentucky Derby, there's a whole series of three-year-old races through the summer. The biggest three-year-old race in the summer is a race at Saratoga called the Travers, which is also a mile and a quarter, just like the Kentucky Derby, and has this huge, glorious history and a really fun history of upsets, like American Pharoah, who won the Triple Crown in 2015. And that's near and dear to my heart. The horse I loved in the Derby and the Belmont that year was a horse named Keen Ice, who just, I had loved him since he broke his maiden at Churchill Downs. Usually I don't have my Derby horse until the week of, but that year, September, I'm like, no, that's my Derby horse. Keen Ice runs seventh behind American Pharoah in the Derby, third in the Belmont. But, you know, they call Saratoga the graveyard of favorites for a reason, which is to say a lot of favorites get beat. And Keen Ice beat Triple Crown winner American Pharoah in the Travers. And that is still one of my all-time favorite races. So, you know, you could have that. Or then there's other big three-year-old races around the country as well. You know, a lot of the tracks will have their summer derbies, you know, the West Virginia Derby, the Indiana Derby, the Pennsylvania Derby is always a big one. That's kind of a one last grade one race against three-year-olds before a lot of them go on to face older horses in races like the Breeders' Cup Classic at the end of the year.
There's so much creativity that goes into naming a horse. Do you have any ideas if you owned a horse, what you would call your horse?
Well, I don't know yet, only because my favorite kind of horse name is one that is a riff on both the sire and the dam. So I would want to see their name, you know, the dad and the mom, if you will, sire and dam as horse speak for the horse's dad and the horse's mom, and kind of make a pun on that. Like, my all-time favorite horse name is, there was this sprinter about 12 years ago-ish, by a stallion named Elusive Bluff out of Diamond Air, and they named the horse CZ, like cubic zirconia, like fake diamond. Bluff, diamond, CZ.
I love it. Eli Burke is in our sports lounge today, and Eli, I know you've given this a lot of thought. If you had a horse, what would you name it?
Well, it seems like it would have to be an obvious choice just with the subject matter, but I would go with Usain Colt, a play on Usain Bolt, the sprinter.
Yes!
And I feel like that's an automatic win every time.
Yeah, the best I could come up with was Mr. Ed, and that's stupid, and I really haven't put any thought into it. That's a great one, Eli.
Thank you.
Although, a fun fact, what is the offstage name of the horse who played Mr. Ed?
I don't know.
Bamboo Harvester.
I did not know that.
Speaking of silly horse names, that's a pretty silly one. But yeah, Bamboo Harvester was the horse who played Mr. Ed.
Was that a Jeopardy question or something, Rowan? Is that how you knew?
No, that isn't. I mean, if they asked me it on Jeopardy, I would have been all over it. But no, it's just something I stumbled across over the years. You know, when you're friends with a bunch of horse nerds, you learn a lot of horse facts.
Rowan Ward is on the line with us, freelance horse racing writer, editor, chart caller, and contributor to horseracingnation.com. But you also, you were on Jeopardy. That's pretty exciting. How'd you do?
I mean, it was a wild ride. So funny, my first taping was the Tuesday after the Kentucky Derby in 2021. I could not believe that they called me to tape right after the Kentucky Derby. I ran into a little buzzsaw called Matt Imodio, you know, 38-game champion, gave him a fight. I was the first, I was his 18th game, and I was the first player to be ahead of him at the end of the Jeopardy round. A few things didn't shake my way late, so I lost. But then they announced the Second Chance tournament and called me for it. So came back for the Second Chance competition in 2022. I won that and played in the Tournament of Champions. So all in all, it was a real fun ride.
That is excellent. That can I ask how much you won? You don't have to tell me, but I just always feel like you don't really win that much money on Jeopardy.
Oh, I mean, it's all on TV. It wasn't any kind of secret. I finished third in my original episode. I had half of Matamodio's score going into final, so I had to bet it all and wiped out on final. So I got the $1,000 third place prize. They've increased it since. I think it's $2,000 for third now, but it was $1,000 when I was there. And then it was $35,000 to win the Second Chance. And then I was unfortunately beaten in my first TOC game, but I still got $5,000 just for showing up. So that was
pretty
great.
And do you watch Jeopardy all the time and play along at home still?
Religiously. I still watch Jeopardy. I still play in a lot of trivia leagues. It's still just, trivia is something I've always found fun.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, it's so funny because there are episodes of Jeopardy that I watch that I feel like I'm really a genius. And then I come on a category that I just have no idea whatsoever. Very fun. Well, Rowan,
no one ever tells you about Jeopardy is everyone has their good categories and their categories they're not so great at. Even the best players have their categories that are like, no, I don't want a category on that. Please, anything but that.
Yeah. Well, we all have our specialties, that's for sure. Well, it was so great to talk to you, Rowan. Nice to meet you. A little recap of the Kentucky Derby for those of you just tuning in. It happened yesterday. And thank you. I'd love to talk to you again about some horse racing as the other competitions happen throughout the year.
Thank you so much. I would be happy to. This was a blast.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rowan Ward. They are a contributor to HorseRacingNation.com, freelance horse racing writer, editor, chart caller, and perhaps our horse expert here on 720 WGN. And we're going to check in with Ron Brown. Ron, I want to share a little story that involves the Kentucky Derby from yesterday. Did you happen to watch it?
I did. Yeah, it was a very exciting race.
Yeah, I'm so mad I missed it, but I'm sure I could find it somewhere. And I'll just watch like the last 5 minutes of it or something. Mm-hmm. But Eli Burke was doing sports today and he left, but he sent this to me and I just want, this is such a feel good I want to share with everyone. Darren Pang put something up on Twitter and I want to share this. Congrats to Golden Tempo on the Kentucky Derby victory. Troy Murray has attended for so many years and his good friends brought his picture to his seat. So why wouldn't 19 win? Just incredible and emotional. 19 came out of nowhere. I couldn't believe my eyes. Love ya. And yes, Troy Murray's sweater number was 19 on the Blackhawks, and Golden Tempo wore number 19. Isn't that total goosebumps for you?
Yeah, I didn't draw that correlation, but yeah, that is nice now. Wow, fantastic.
Well, God bless you, Troy Murray, and the Blackhawks organization, and Darren Pang's a great guy, too. And that, and thank you to Eli for giving me this story. He couldn't fit it in his sports.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, this is just so great. So I wanted to share that, and you have some entertainment and movie talk for us.
I do, yes.
Yeah. Where do we want to start this week, Ron?
Well, there can be... Oh, I've got music and everything. Yes. Hooray for Hollywood.
Hooray for Ron Brown.
Well, there's been some Oscar news, some changes to the Oscar categories. I know that you watched the Oscars for the first time in a long time this year, so this should interest you. The best international feature film is no longer going to be handcuffed by the one country, one film rule. That was the rule for since the 50s, since they created the best international feature. The country nominated one movie, and that was it. So if there were a couple of good movies that came out of France, sorry, one goes, one doesn't. A couple of good movies that comes out of Germany, sorry, one movie can be nominated, the other can't. So they're finally doing away with that rule. So that's actually very good. So they can be nominated by their country now, or they're automatically entered if they win one of six film festivals, international film festivals. You know, the big ones like the Berlin International Film Festival, the Sundance, the Cannes Film Festival, Toronto or Venice International Film Festival. So that's good news for international feature films. This is I think the most interesting thing that came out of the Oscar category rule changes. No AI actors or writers will be eligible to win an Oscar.
That's good.
It's very good. It's like a no-brainer. It's like you have to say that. You have to be human to win an Oscar. But in today's, you know, AI, you do. You have to make a rule that says you can't be a computer and win an Oscar. So that's it's actually a thing. There's an AI actor called Tilly Norwood that was created by a company that tried to sell her services to filmmakers on the promise that, hey, this is a great cost-saving idea. You can just hire this AI actor to do a role or a background role. That's been a big fear, is that they're just going to make a lot of AI actors for the background and nobody would know the difference. And it's probably true right there. They cannot win an Oscar if AI writes a movie or acts in a movie. So, and have you heard about the Val Kilmer AI?
No.
They created a Val Kilmer AI actor, and it's in a movie called As Deep as the Grave. Of course, you know, he died. Yeah. He died in April of last year. But the movie uses AI, archival footage, and voice recordings of Val Kilmer to create a Val Kilmer AI character, completely AI character in the movie. He had plans to make the movie before his death, and then his families helped the filmmakers create an AI Val Kilmer. Now, you should watch the trailer, because the trailer is out. The movie's not. They just say it's going to come out later this year. But the trailer is out, and there's the cheesiest line of all time in the movie trailer. Here's an AI-generated Val Kilmer, who is dead, says in the trailer, "Don't fear the dead, and don't fear me."
Ugh.
I know.
That is like, so tasteless.
It is. The family's behind
it,
though.
Well, see, that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. Like, at first when you're doing the story, it's like, how can they do it? But if the family's behind it,
yeah.
And why is the family behind that?
Well, I think I'm sure there's money involved, to further his legacy. And he would also be like one of the first AI movie stars, you know, to be in a movie. So that would further his legacy. So I'm sure they're hoping that it's well done and that it's respected. And I guess everybody hopes that. But when you're putting something in the creative hands of people who want to make money, that's not always going to be the case. You can't trust people. That's a bumper sticker for you there.
That's what's going to say that on my headstone. And they'll probably bury me in the wrong plot. All right. Taylor Swift files to trademark her voice and image because of AI concerns.
Yeah.
I thought this was fascinating. She's taken legal steps to trademark her voice and a photograph to protect her identity against AI misuse.
Getting ahead of it, yeah.
I think this is going to be a common thing now, don't you?
I do, and I hope that it's not, but it's kind of like inevitable. I think so. Like like we said, people are going to be people, and they're going to find a way to cut down costs. If you hire an AI actor and you save 90% of your budget, people are going to say, "What's wrong with that?"
So. Well, don't say, "Hey, it's Taylor Swift," or "Hey, it's Taylor," because you can't use those
good
copyrighted terms.
Good. Should I get ahead of that and
yes.
copyright Ron Brown, WGN News?
Yeah, because voice, people are going to try and make that their voice because you got such a great radio voice and just not even on radio.
Well, maybe I can make some money out of it then someday.
I'm going to try and talk as low as you can.
The funny thing is that's Eli is just using AI.
You're on to me. Okay.
When you hear that Bob Surratt promo that's running on this station, it's pretty funny. He is a goof.
He's a good guy.
All right. Anything else do you have in the
world? Well, there's an Oscar statuette that went missing at New York's JFK Airport of the guy who won an Oscar for producing what was it, Mr. Nobody Against Putin, the Russian documentary about a Russian teacher who was documenting how Russia was indoctrinating students in the classroom with all this false information about the Ukraine war. He won an Oscar for his best documentary, had the Oscar with him on the plane, and TSA agents took it away from him. They said, that looks like a weapon. You cannot carry that on the plane. So they made him check it into baggage, and he arrives and goes, gets off the plane, and where's my Oscar? Oh, gee, it's not here. I don't know where it is. So it was missing for days, but they did eventually find it. So that's a good ending to that story,
yeah.
But not a good start to it. I mean, he's let him keep his Oscar on the plane. I mean, he's not going to bop somebody over the head with it. Come on.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, so.
So I waste way too much time on reels on Facebook and mm-hmm. TikTok mm-hmm. and I know you've seen these, and I can't stop watching them, and I hate them so much. These AI-generated pictures or videos of people like, oh, here's the cast of Taxi.
And they're then, dancing.
And they have their young self and their old self.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And if they have passed away, they have these big, fluffy angel wings on them, and it really irks me, but yet I can't stop watching them.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you watch one, even by, you're like, oh, I don't like this, and you keep it rolling, it kind of, the algorithm says, oh, Wendy likes this, let's give her more of these every day.
Yeah.
And so that's how that happens. Yeah, I've seen those, and I've seen them, all the AI, or, you know, the AI actors dancing like Dirty Dancing, you know, the Patrick Swayze dance.
Oh, I haven't seen those.
And it's kind of funny because it's like to see, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger dancing like Patrick Swayze is, and it looks like he's actually doing it. So that's the thing about AI. It is very good at what it does.
I don't trust anything I see anymore.
A good rule of thumb.
I'm getting bamboozled by things, and like even news stories, I have to double check everything.
Well, they first started using fake news, and the term fake news actually did mean something because it actually was fake news, because so many people were passing it around on the internet, these websites that were creating what looked like legitimate news stories and legitimate headlines. And as a journalist, I was constantly checking these things on Facebook and telling people politely, as one would say, this is not a real story. This is, here's how you check. Here's how you verify. You can just do a Google search. If somebody was saying this, it would be real news and not just some small outlet that you've never heard of. So you got to be vigilant. That's for sure.
I know, and now I'm probably, my phone is listening to me, so I'm going to get more of these reels. You know, the one that really, I don't know why it bothered me so much, but they had, it was WKRP in Cincinnati, and I forgot Lonnie Anderson passed away.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, so you see those, and you know, what happens a lot of times, too, is you see those obituaries that people are like, oh, RIP, and he's like, oh, that's Lonnie. And it's like, well, she died 6 years ago, you know. So I've been caught with that, passed that on to, like, friends or family, and they're like, yeah, Dad, we know this. We knew this 5 years ago. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Sorry. False alarm.
Well, I don't know. The AI dead celebrity things. They did the cast of, what was that show? Hey, what's happening? I loved the
Mr. Cotter?
No, what's happening with
what's
Rerun
happening? Yeah.
And Dwayne and Dee. I loved that show.
What a fun show,
so much. And, they did, the dead celebrities from that. Shirley Hemphill passed away. She was so funny. Rerun's still around, though, so that's good to know.
That is good.
All right, Ron, I really appreciate this, and you'll handle the news for the rest of the afternoon?
I will do that, yes. That's kind of my job. I'm all in on doing my job.
Excellent. Ron Brown, we thank you so much.
Thank you.
I promised this psycho salad recipe. I talked about it at the beginning of the show. And I also realize now, as I was having a couple of vodka and tonics last night, I made guacamole because Cinco de Mayo is coming up, and I really like Chipotle guacamole. And one of the texters, you guys are so nice, 312-981-7200, actually sent me the copycat recipe of Chipotle guacamole, so we'll share that next here on 720 WGN. Psycho salad. Yes, that's what it is. It's Wendy Snyder here, and I made this salad last night, and it was delicious. I saw it somewhere online. I may have adjusted it a little bit, but it's healthy, it's delicious, and I have a very addictive personality, and when I find something I like I'm going to have this salad probably every day for a week, and then I won't want it again for like a year, because that's what I do. But I said, oh, I'm making this crazy salad, Jimmy Mac, do you want some? And he goes, sure. And then later he's like, oh, Mom made a psycho salad, and I like that name, so it's now my psycho salad. It's a can of chickpeas, garbanzo beans, chashi, if you're Italian, whatever you want to call them. Rinse them out of the, you know, can. Just pour the can, or rinse it with water, drain it, put the chickpeas in a bowl, then a half a can of corn, just, you know, white or yellow, whichever you prefer. And I rinsed that out too and just used a half a can of corn. Chop up some Italian parsley and put that in there, some chopped up red pepper and red bell pepper and chopped red onion. And then the dressing on this and everything, I didn't use any measurements. It's just, you can put more stuff if you like black olives. I bet this would be good in there too. But chickpeas, half a can of corn, Italian parsley, chopped red pepper, chopped red onion to taste. And then 2 to 3 cloves of garlic. I would start with 2, and if you want more, you can add another one. And then the juice of 1 lemon. And just something with the garlic and the lemon and all those crunchy things, it's just absolutely delicious. So that is the psycho salad. You can DM me on Facebook if you didn't get that. Chickpeas, half a can of corn, Italian parsley, chopped red pepper, chopped red onion, juice of 1 lemon, and 2 to 3 cloves of garlic. And now I have a new way that I shred my garlic. I used to have a garlic press, and then it just was such a pain to clean. I don't know. I just got sick of using it. So now I have like, I guess it's a, I don't know what it's called. It's a grater. You can grate Parmesan cheese on it. It's just is it a grater or a planer? But that's how I do garlic now, just on a very small hold grating thing. And watch your finger. That's all I have to tell you on that. Also, earlier today we were talking about guacamole. I really screwed up last night. I had a couple vodka and tonics. I made the psycho salad, and then I'm like, oh, I'm going to make some guacamole for Cinco de Mayo. And I really love Chipotle's guacamole. So I tried to recreate it, and I realized this morning in the vegetable drawer there was a jalapeno pepper that I kind of forgot to put in it. And you know what else I forgot to put in it, which is like a major thing? Cilantro. I just realized I never cut that up. I cut the chopped parsley to put in my psycho salad, and I never got about doing the cilantro. And then, do you like cilantro or do you not? To some people, it tastes like soap. It's a genetic thing. It's not your fault. Some people cannot have it. I didn't have it till I was probably in my 30s. Because to me, Mexican food was Taco Bell. I didn't know. And now I love it. I can't get enough of the cilantro. And thanks to the listener who sent to me the Chipotle guacamole recipe. It was in Men's Health magazine like 6 years ago. So I'm going to share it with you people if you'd like to try it. Although I feel like this might not be all of it. 2 ripe avocados. 2 teaspoons lime juice. I think you're going to need more, but that's just me. 2 tablespoons cilantro chopped. 1/4 cup red onion diced. 1/2 jalapeno, including the seeds. However, if you don't want it that spicy, don't use the seeds. And then 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. Now, I don't know. I feel like Chipotle has some more kind of spices in there. Maybe cumin? I'm not sure. But according to Men's Health, again, two ripe avocados. They said use Haas. You don't have to. Two ripe avocados, 2 teaspoons lime juice, 2 tablespoons cilantro chopped, 1/4 cup red onion diced, 1/2 jalapeno, including seeds, diced, and 1/4 teaspoon of kosher salt. What to do? Cut avocados in half. Remove pits carefully. Do you really have to tell people that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that. I can't cook for my life. I can make a grilled cheese.
Grilled cheeses are great.
Yeah, but that's all I got. But it sounds really good. But I think you're right. I wonder if it's like a Colonel Sanders situation where they have to have a secret ingredient that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Because everyone would be doing it then.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, it's not that. There's also, I love the Chipotle chicken, and there's a recipe online to copycat that. I haven't made it yet, but we'll see. So cut avocados in half and remove pits carefully. That's what I meant. Do they need to tell us to do that? Like, it actually says on a frozen pizza, do not eat this frozen. Really? File that under duh. No kidding.
Don't bake the cardboard.
Yeah. All right. So cut avocados in half. Remove pits carefully. Scoop the avocados into a bowl. Toss and coat with lime juice. Add the salt and mash until it's a smooth consistency. I would add to that, leave a few chunks because honestly, that's better that way. Fold in remaining ingredients and mix. Taste the guac and adjust seasoning if necessary. I don't see any garlic in here, and you could add that if you wanted to. But they do something at Chipotle that makes it maybe more tangy.
Yeah. It does have a nice tanginess to it. You're right. I'm just kind of salivating right now. I might have to get Chipotle for lunch.
You know? I know. I think I'm going to have to stop on the way. See, I am so suggestible about food, and even, like, I can suggest it to myself.
Yeah.
It's like I listen to other people talk about it, but then I want it. Somebody said sun-dried tomatoes are good in guac. I do not like sun-dried tomatoes. To me, the consistency is that of a piece of leather.
That's how I feel about mushrooms. I don't like mushrooms.
Yeah, the consistency of I like mushrooms.
Like the texture.
Yeah. So sun-dried tomatoes, it's like, you know, that candy, it was like a fruit snack, and you would unroll it.
Oh, fruit roll-up.
Yeah.
That's a great reference. Yes, it is like that, yep.
And that's why I don't like it. On the chickpea salad, I need amounts. Can you post it? There really isn't any amounts. You just, you know, chickpeas, 1/2 can of corn, Italian parsley, chopped red pepper, chopped red onion, juice of 1 lemon, 2 to 3 cloves garlic. That's it. Someone 773, Chipotle chili powder or canned Chipotle peppers and or sauce that they add to their guac. They're not giving the full recipe. They don't want us to have it. But
yeah.
All right. Well, I'm hitting Chipotle on the way home. I'll meet you there, Neil.